Blog Talk Radio.
It's time to strap our boots on. This is the perfect day to die. Wipe the blood out of our eyes. In this life there's no surrender, and there's nothing left for us to do. Find the strength to see.
Hello, folks, and thank you very much again for coming to Bard's Logic Political Talk, part of the growing conservative conversation, and also part of the Patriot Journalist Network. And you can find the Patriot Journalist Network by going to www.patriotjournalist.com. Please check it out, as well as, if you like, follow the show simply by going here on Blog Talk Radio and hitting the follow button. And you will get some email updates on when the show will be airing. And also there is a Facebook page and group. And also visit the Bard's Logic Political Talk website by going to www.bardslogicpoliticaltalk.com. And whether you're listening live now or on the archives, please share the show with friends, family, and neighbors. And that's easy just by giving them the link and they can get the show. And it can also be shared on people's iPhones, smartphones, on the computer, CDs, things of that nature, for people to listen to the shows at a later time. Now, tonight we have a very special guest, and that is Mark Willis, and he will be discussing the summer RNC meeting here in August, and we'll be talking about the rules, especially some of the things that he's going to be working on, some resolutions. And we'll also have grassroots activist Brian Darty on as well. And so what we'll do now is I do see him on the line. And so I will open up his mic. Thank you very much, Mark, for calling into the show. How are you?
Hey, I'm doing fine. Glad to be back on the show.
Yeah, glad to have you back. I know we had you on a couple of times for different topics, one of which is when you ran against Priebus for the RNC chairmanship. And I still would wish that you were the one who was successful in that. So what I'd like to start off with is tell us, for folks who may not have as many updates as what happened there in the spring meeting, that's what I was going to mention earlier in the start of the show, but if you can give us kind of a recap of what was proposed, what resolutions in the spring that either made it or did not make it, and then we can move on from there.
Okay, very good. So what happened at the spring meeting, right? Well, what happened, we can go back to the winter meeting in January, actually, when I ran against Mr. Priebus at the resolution committee. I took basically the same resolution that was passed at the state of Maine state committee, basically saying that we were going to roll the rules back to 2008. We didn't recognize the 2012 rules. The state of Maine Republican Party does not recognize the 2012 rules as being valid. So I basically took that resolution forward to the resolution committee in Charlotte, and they ruled it out of order, and it died right there. So that was the first battle. But what came out of that also was a resolution that was brought forth by the committee RNC members from Nevada. And what that said was that at the next meeting in Los Angeles in spring, the focus was going to be something other than just a simple chairman's meeting. Usually the spring meeting is just a chairman's meeting where the chairman get together and discuss matters, but the other members kind of get together and know each other a little bit better, and there's not a whole lot of important business being done. That resolution brought forward that rules 1 through 11 and 13 through 26 needed to be addressed at the spring meeting to try to roll back these rules, because by that point in time, Robert, everybody knew that these rules were invalidly passed. So many people knew that, and that they knew that something had to be done. And, of course, Martin Blackwell from Virginia, National Committee Man, was leading the charge in that endeavor. So leading up to the spring meeting in Los Angeles in April, you have a standing rules committee. And so for people who don't really understand, you know, how the RNC is composed, I'll break it down a little bit for you without getting too technical. so you don't, I don't put your listeners to sleep, but there's 168 members of the entire RNC, and then within the Rules Committee itself, you have one member per state, and I am the member from Maine, and then you also have one member for the six territories, Guam and Puerto Rico and the other islands. So altogether, you have 56 members on the Rules Committee. So what Morton Blackwell did leading up to Los Angeles was that he had his amendment, his proposal that was going to be pushed through the Rules Committee for a vote, which basically was asking us to get back to the 2008 rules. And I wasn't involved in any of the sidebar discussions and things like that, but evidently there were some counter offers proposed, and they reached an impasse that the RNC was willing to give Morton 80 or 90% of what he wanted, but there was a 10% or 15% that he just couldn't budge with, and so that deal or that compromise died. Morton took the entire kit and caboodle, the whole package, to the Rules Committee, and each of us got up one by one and either argued for it or against it, and I stood up and argued for it. And one of the things I said to the entire Rules Committee was that, you know, as one of the delegates from the state of Maine, in fact, we had eight veterans on our delegation, seven of us were stripped of our credentials. I said, you know, I was stripped of my credentials. I didn't get a chance to vote on these rules in Tampa, but I have a choice now. I get the chance now to do it, and I'm supporting Morton Blackwell in his amendment. So I think Morton was pretty happy with that approach. So what happened was we took the vote, and I don't know the exact numbers, but we lost by, I think it was two votes. It fell short by two votes. So it didn't even make it out of the Rules Committee itself. So you had to have a simple majority just to get it up and out of the committee. And then let's say it had made it out, then it would have made it to the full body on Friday, but it didn't. But even if a change does make it to the full body, then it has to be voted on and approved by 3/4 of the body itself. So there's a couple hurdles and a couple, you know, really pretty hard thresholds you've got to overcome just to get anything changed through the rule process, through these rules. So obviously, it didn't even make it out of the Rules Committee, so that didn't happen. The only rule that did pass was just some language that said no presidential candidate has the right under 16A2, which was controversial. Rule 16 itself is very controversial, and as Morton Blackwell says, part of the Romney-Ginsburg power grab, there had been so many emails and so many things regarding 16A2 with regards to presidential candidates having veto power over delegates, that they actually went ahead and clarified the language and said, well, you know, no presidential candidates can veto any delegate unless prescribed by state law. So if a state actually wants to go ahead and do that, there's nothing really the RNC can do to stop it. So that was basically the outcome in a nutshell. Without going into too much detail, that was really what happened in Tampa. There was another amendment that was offered to modify Rule 6 to get rid of 16A1, which would have turned caucus states into primary states and making straw polls binding. That actually was proposed by Jeff Johnson from Minnesota. It did make it through the Rules Committee, but it died in the main body on Friday, so that one didn't pass. And Ashley and I did vote for Jeff's amendment 16A1, but we were way outnumbered on that one. So that's kind of where we're at. We're leading up to the summer meeting coming out of Los Angeles. So really, not a whole lot has changed with regards to the rules, as far as looking at the rules themselves and looking at the language and looking at the document and saying, okay, what's changed since Tampa? Not much, but a lot has been going on at the grassroots level that you just don't see and hear about unless you're, you know, really paying attention to Facebook and groups like LibertyRoll.com. I mean, they are making a huge surge. They came out of that Los Angeles meeting you know, each time you go to these meetings, you know, you learn more and more. They learn that, okay, you know, this is, you know, we're working on this. Let's get together and really, you know, through the resolution process, what we have in front of us tonight, this is really the last shot. This is really it. From going through the resolution aspect of it, this is the last shot. And I told them, I said, you know, you guys have a great resolution. It's airtight from what lawyers have said. I'll bring it forward. Mm-hmm. It's your resolution. It's our resolution, and you guys deserve all the credit for doing the research and coming up with this. I will lead the charge, and if whether it's successful or not, you know, I'm going to give you guys as much credit as I can along the way about this. So really, this resolution that we're bringing now is the strongest argument, and the argument that, looking back, we did talk about this in our resolution, and we did cover this in so many words in our resolution in the state of Maine. But what this does, in a legal perspective, you might have initially a paragraph or two that talks about something. What this does is this expands on that and kind of breaks that out when you say these rules were invalidly adopted or improperly passed. You know, what does that mean? This resolution says exactly what that means. This tells us that RNC Rule 30, for example, directs that the House of Representatives rules are the guiding rules of the RNC, the National Convention, and that it breaks down through House Rule 19 that 40 minutes of debate was necessary, and it didn't happen. And it just goes, you know, systematically through the rules and what should have happened and what didn't happen. And at the end, the resolve is that, this, again, getting us right back to where we wanted to be before, is that those 2008 rules up until the Romney-Ginsburg power grab, those rules need to be in place, and these two 2012 rules need to be basically abolished and go back to the 2008 rules. So that's what we're fighting for in Boston, that we are fighting to get this resolution. First step is you have to get it to the resolution committee, and if you get 10 co-sponsors or more, then according to the rules, right, then it goes out of the resolution committee into the full body. So right now we have 6 sponsors. And once we get our 10th state, and we have 3 weeks to go or so, so it's not uncommon that you would have – we're actually doing pretty good at this point in time. So once we get our 10th co-sponsor or more, then we can get it – you know, once we get to Boston, it will be up and out of the resolution committee, and then it will go to them for a full vote. It will probably be ruled out of order again, a resolution like this. It could be ruled out of order in the resolution committee, and if so, we go to the press. If it makes it to the full body on Friday and they rule out of order, we go to the press. If it fails by a majority vote, we go to the press, and if it passes, we go to the press. So we're going to the press no matter what happens with this resolution. And really what we are saying here in so many words, just to cut to the chase, is that we are giving the Republican National Committee, the RNC, one last chance to save itself from itself and what happened in Tampa with the rules. And if this argument doesn't work, then nothing's going to work. And so this is the last final chance that we're giving from a perspective. And if this were to pass, then this would set up Morton Blackwell or myself or someone else to come back in the winter meeting of 2014 and try to get what he got passed before through again, if the RNC hadn't just gone back to the 2008 rules already, which they should, if this passes. So, you know, there's a lot of things to unpackage with that, Robert, and so this is what's going on with regards to the rules. I know Brian, if he's on, or Nicole, they're really the a lot of the drivers on this too, and they have their perspective. And again, I'm working with them, and it's amazing, Robert. I mean, how many grassroots activists and supporters are at these RNC meetings? When you go to, I mean, Los Angeles is not exactly, you know, right around the corner for most people. And there were quite a few people out there. I was amazed. And I mean, who knew that RNC meetings would be so exciting and so popular?
Oh, right.
But they are. I mean, it really is. I mean,
they're important. That's
Yeah. I mean, it really. I mean, I think for a long time, people just didn't pay attention to the RNC and didn't really care. But maybe one of the try to look at on the positive side of things, that one of the things that did come out of that convention in Tampa is that a lot of people started paying attention to the RNC. You know, what is this organization? Who are these people? And what do they stand for?
But one of the things that I think for the benefit of the audience, because we have brought this up a couple times here, and if everyone would humor me in this, is I have a clip. It's about a six-minute clip of Morton Blackwell's presenting his rules amendments, and so I was going to play that for the folks who may have not had the opportunity to hear that. So you go with that, Mark?
Yeah, that's fine. I'll just go back on mute.
Okay, and then I've got a couple folks. I see you want to chime in while this clip is going on. I'll touch base with you then while we're listening to the clip. Thank you.
13-25 of the Republican National Committee are hereby amended to be the rules adopted by the 2008 Republican National Convention and subsequently amended by the Republican National Committee pursuant to Rule 10D and further as unanimously recommended on August 23rd, 2012 by the Republican National Committee and that Rules 1 through 11 and 13 through 25 be changed.
Is your second to the motion? Second by Mr. Smack of Nevada. Please proceed, Mr. Baldwin.
Thank you. There has been an enormous outrage over certain things which happened at the Tampa Convention, and which were evidenced by the enormous opposition to the adoption of the rules by the convention, the rules that were reported by the convention rules committee. There is, and every person in this room is aware of it, still an enormous unrest over this. In my judgment, I'll be frank to say it was power grab by Ben Ginsburg, who accurately described himself as the Romney campaign leader on the convention rules committee. And there is considerable outrage, and we have, I believe, here an opportunity to demonstrate to grassroots people that we want to join the Republican Party, that we reject this matter of power grab. And so that's what my proposal would do. I've handed out to you a multi-page thing here, which includes the text of the rule changes as the rules would read from what they are now, going back to the provisions that were adopted unanimously by the Republican National Committee the day before the Rules Committee meeting. I think a clear break, a clear repudiation of what was done there is important. Many, many people have described what was happening as an outrage. It's been described as a travesty. There's hardly a negative term that hasn't been described, that hasn't been used to describe it. And we have the opportunity to pass this resolution. And then, after we have passed it, those elements of the rules which were changed, which are not objectionable, can easily be added onto the rules, so we do not lose any of the good work of the Convention Rules Committee. But I think we need a clear demonstration to the grassroots people we want in our party that we are not in favor of concentrating power. We want power to flow from the bottom up. We want to treat newcomers fairly, politely, and where possible, cordially. And I think this needs to be done. And we've all received a lot of emails on it. I've also had distributed to you a letter dated April 8th that is signed by 64 conservative movement leaders, starting off with Ed Meese and including Grover Norquist and Phyllis Schlafly and many others who are historic supporters of the Republican Party. They see that this is important. I believe we to take this opportunity to come out of this convention saying we have done something constructive and the Republican Party welcomes newcomers. And this is our opportunity to do it. And I urge you, please, to do this. Chairman Priebus has told me that he would support a record vote on my proposal, and I'm going to request a record Brother Long, just so that we all have an opportunity to express ourselves and so that everybody can know how we vote on this matter of repudiating the power grabs that took place in Tampa. Thank you.
Thank you. Is there additional discussion? Sir.
Yes, Mr. Chairman, on behalf of myself and the entire delegation, we like to stand with Morton, and I plan to speak so I can speak no more. Just joking. I don't think it's any accident that probably, arguably, the two most grassroots parties, the RNC, the state of Virginia, which I understand has had as many as 18 or 20,000 grassroots delegates at their state convention in the past. And Texas, which did have the largest state convention this year, we have 18,000 delegates and alternates. That those two parties, which try to really pay attention to their grassroots, are in the same position on this. We are getting hundreds and hundreds of emails from delegates to our state convention. Every one of them wants us to go back to the prior rules. As I've traveled to state Texas, and I do that extensively, everybody, at every meeting, we get asked about this. I have yet to have a single person in our state tell us that they want to maintain the current rules. So if we're going to truly be a grassroots party, I think we need to listen to grassroots. I understand the arguments that some make that this is not against the grassroots, but I have news for y'all, it's interpreted that way. So I think we need to make a strong statement that this party is not top-down, this party is bottom-up, and guess what, we listen. And wasn't that what the Growth and Opportunity Project is supposed to be all about? Thank you for your attention.
Okay, there you have it, folks. For those who did not get the opportunity to hear the clip, and I'll find the link to it, and I'll put it on the Bard's Logic Political Talk page here on Facebook. And speaking of that, I want to welcome Michelle Anderson, who I'm just adding on to the Bard's Logic Political Talk group. And thank you very much to the newest member. It's great to have you with us. And so, Mark, what I've got here is I've got a number of folks on the line. I want to have you tell us one of the other resolutions that you're going to be that you're working on and that you're going to present at the meeting. I believe it has to do with the IRS. And then I do have Brian Daugherty on the line, so we'll touch a little synopsis of that. And, of course, we will go in more details on it. But then give us a little synopsis on that, and then I'll be letting in Brian. So go ahead, Mark.
All right, so if I wasn't causing enough problems, Roger, Robert, at the meeting in August, if I wasn't causing enough trouble with the rules as it was, I have a second resolution that basically, the title is the resolution in support of Republicans who have called for the abolition of the IRS. And this came to mind, I mean, going back to Los Angeles for just a second, some people say, well, resolution, so what? Who cares, right? What do they do? It's just a piece of paper. It's a sentiment. So what? Well, I look at it as more than just a sentiment or a compass that's pointing a particular organization in a direction. I brought forth a resolution in Los Angeles that was questioning the Department of Homeland Security, the DHS, and all the ammo purchases that they were having, the 1.6 billion rounds of ammo. And people thought it was kind of crazy talk at first, but then I started bringing more and more evidence, you know, Forbes magazine, letters from congressmen, and we actually got the resolution through and it passed. And people were saying, wow, I didn't know about this. You mean hundreds of, hundreds of thousands of hollow point rounds being bought up by the DHS? This makes no sense. Well, since then, and that was in April, 2 weeks later, James Imhoff, Senator Imhoff from Oklahoma, introduced the Ammo Act of 2013. Daryl Issa started looking into it. GAO started looking into DHS with their ammo purchases. And then the House passed a bill in June requiring the DHS to justify their ammo purchases. Now, it's not to say that this resolution had everything to do with it, but I think it is very important within the Republican Party that when you pass these resolutions, sometimes they're really good, you know, feel-good things in celebration of someone's life, and that's great. but sometimes it's important for us as members of that organization to let our members on the Hill know that we have their back and that we support them in what they do. And it means a lot to them that the actual party that they are part of, you know, believes in them and what they're doing. So that was a big thing that we got through in Los Angeles, the DHS resolution. So obviously coming off of that, not too long after that, the whole story about the IRS, you know, targeting mm-hmm. conservative groups broke. And I said, okay.
Right, yeah, we interviewed Justin Biddick Thomas, who was one of the Tea Party leaders who got targeted by the IRS. We had him on the show.
Yeah, so I the more I looked into it, you know, the more I was like, oh, come on, please, you know, enough. Is this, you know, do we get to do put together a resolution on this? I guess we do. So because I believe it's and this one should be a no-brainer, that basically we are calling for the abolition of the IRS. But what I do in this resolution, I talk about Republicans past and present that have talked about this, you know, the present time being Ted Cruz. You know, he's called for abolishing the IRS and proposed that Americans pay a simple flat tax, mm-hmm. like a one-page postcard. Then you've got Ron Paul, who said just shutter the doors altogether and once and for all, and the only way to protect the freedoms of Americans of the IRS, the known and suspected violations, is to just shut the door and get rid of the income tax altogether. But there's other things that have been going on that maybe people don't know about, and I try to unpackage that within this resolution. That the Washington Post reported back in May that the White House Counsel's Office, they knew that the Treasury Department, IG, Inspector General, had a report about the IRS targeting conservative groups that was done back in April, which was weeks before the matter became public. So they knew about this before it came public. I mean, it was slipped out basically by the representative who was out there talking from the IRS. And then one more thing, the Daily Caller, pointed out that the president of the National Organization for Marriage, or NOM, found out that one or more employees at the IRS had leaked NOM's confidential tax return information to their enemies. And one of the donors leaked included Mitt Romney's political action committee. So for all these things that have been going on, and really the conservative group's been targeted since 2011, the resolve in this resolution basically states that the RNC, we support these leaders past and present who've advocated for abolishing the IRS, you know, either in favor of substituting a simple flat tax or eliminating the income tax altogether. So I'm bringing this forward, and you know, what does it do? It raises this issue up, and you have to discuss it. And when you discuss these types of things, you educate. And some people obviously are, you know, their focus are on different things. So you can educate people on this issue. I'd be kind of surprised on this issue if they really weren't paying attention and they didn't know that much about it. The DHS resolution back in April, you know, there were a few people that knew something about it, but by the time I walked out of that resolution committee, they knew a lot about this. And it's funny that after the fact, once it passed and you started to see the Fox News, other news organizations picking up on this whole ammo issue, I was getting emails from the members of the resolution committee saying, hey, Mark, you know, I'm glad we did this. I'm glad you brought this forward. I get it. So that was good. So coming out of Los Angeles with kind of on that momentum, I wanted to take that into the summer meeting with the IRS resolution and obviously the rules resolution that's come forward from the grassroots. I think it's a 1-2 punch that people are going to like.
Okay, great. Well, then I have here, I was going back with Brian and Nicole, and thank you very much both for coming on. I'll be having them both in, and we still would be having Barbara Haney, who was a delegate during the 2012 primary. So what I'll do at this time, as I'm going to open up Brian's mic, and, of course, as we know, I'll just keep all the mics open because I know we do very well here on Bard's Logic is respecting others' time to talk. So I appreciate that from everyone, and that allows everyone to still be able to stay on. So welcome very much, Brian, for coming to the show. How are you? There he is. Brian? Okay, I don't hear. Maybe he's having some, let me ask him here. I know we got him on.
Well, I'll go ahead and chime in while you guys are figuring it all out.
Well, actually, Barbara accidentally opened up the... I'll keep it open since I opened your mic up, but I was looking at the wrong one. I won't open up Ryan's, but I'll keep yours on, and because I know, Barbara, you do have a couple of questions, and I apologize for both parties, both Brian and Barbara there, about the kind of mix-up. I pushed the wrong button, so that's my bad on my part. So, Brian, go ahead. I know you got some things to go over, and then, Barbara, you mentioned you have some things to chime in about and some questions, so... let's do it that way, okay? And once again, I apologize for that. So go ahead, Brian.
Hey, it's great to be on again there, Robert. Appreciate you having me on. Hey, I do have some exciting...
Yeah, 07, so that kind of threw me off.
Yeah. Well,
ahead,
I do have some exciting news here coming up. For the main GOP chairs race, we actually have 2012... he was a Ron Paul national delegate that was one of the ones that was disenfranchised. He was also elected as the main Republican presidential elector. He was very instrumental in helping get out the vote here during the caucuses, especially in the 2nd District. And he is sending a letter of intention to run for the open chairman spot. And, you know, it's really got a lot of people excited here in Maine. Not even branching past that, people who know Sam, he's got an impeccable, his name is Sam Kanders, by the way, he's got an impeccable background, and, you know, to really have somebody that's willing to get his hands dirty and restore at least the platform and put our party in the right direction by opening doors and allowing anybody to participate who would like to, you know, that will be a big turnaround, and it'll be a huge boost for the RNC rules meeting if he was to be successful, because he is a proponent of changing these rules back prior to the Ginsburg grab. We also, through LibertyRoll.com, which is just basically a nationwide grassroots activist private network, what we've been doing is trying to put forth all sorts of different efforts. So as Mark mentioned, he'll be sponsoring our resolution that Nicole Rebels wrote of Carolina Liberty PAC. And, he'll be sponsoring that at the summer RNC meeting coming up in Boston, August 14th through 17th. And Diana Orrick, who's been always very supportive, she's the Nevada National Committee Woman, she's sponsoring another Liberty Roll resolution rebuking the NSA surveillance. And, you know, a lot of this stuff is, there's a lot going on, and we could definitely use all the help we can. All these petitions, we do have petitions for all these resolutions. The signatures, not only do after you sign it, it goes to the RNC members, but it will also be provided when we turn in these resolutions with the co-sponsorships. And, you know, that stuff does weigh, you know, when they do consider them. So, I mean, anybody, it takes, you know, less time to tie your shoe to really sign that petition. So, you know, if you can just, you know, go to LibertyRoll.com and, you know, the Liberty Action Alert that we have, you'll find all the information about where we are with RNC rules, what has happened in the past. There's a lot of confusion as far as, you know, unfortunately, you have old videos and you have disinformation from the RNC about what happened in LA with the rules hearing. And so, you know, a lot of people are really confused. It's a very tough subject to really wrap your head around. We really feel strongly about this resolution that it really goes to the heart of the argument of the violation, the gross violation of not following the proper procedure of House rules. So, and I think Nicole Rebels can speak to that, you know, even more so, as she is definitely the one that, you know, helped bring this, you know, this attempt here to the forefront.
Definitely. And, Mark, before we have some questions here from Barbara and also see Michelle in the chat, who was our most recent member of the Bard's Logic Political Talk Group, and of course other folks can come in and be a member as well by finding it on Facebook, going to the search engine, and just put in Bard's Logic Political Talk and ask to be added on. So, Mark, do you have any comments on that before we bring in some questions from Barbara and Michelle?
Well, you know, I mean, I'm glad Brian brought up the subject of Sam Kander's running. I know Sam well too, and again, he was one of the seven of the eight veteran delegates that had his credentials stripped in Tampa. So, Sam and I spent a lot of time together with guest passes, cruising around the outside of the convention in Tampa, not allowed to go on the floor. And Sam and I did a few media interviews together, talking to different reporters, getting our message out in Tampa. So I got to share some time with Sam, cruising around the hallways of the convention hall, walking around, because what else was there to do but to tell the press your story? So Sam and I went around and did just that. Sam's a great guy. I mean, Brian, I don't know what else to say. Brian summed it up pretty well. Sam's got all the right stuff. He's a great man, and the party would be very good position to take him on as the chair if they chose to do so.
Okay, great. Well, at this time, Barbara, since we already have your mic on, thank you very much. Do you tell a little bit about yourself and your background and what you've experienced in the 2012, and then I know you have some questions here, so thank you very much, Barbara.
Hi. From
the great state of Alaska.
Yeah, where we've had our own wonderful political circus, and I'm sure there's a lot of people listening in on this thing going, oh my gosh, why is she on this show? So, but anyway, we've had our own fun and games here with party leadership, and recently I was districted out, as effective 2 days ago. I am no longer a district chair or vice chair of the regional group because my district no longer exists. So, that being said, I guess I can be I can be a little bit more mouthier again because I don't have to be status quo anymore. Anyway, I appreciate your guys' work sincerely. You guys have been awesome. I've been sort of sucked into the Common Core issue since Tampa. But
yeah,
I was wondering.
I
want
to talk more about that on another show. And I'll dedicate a full show
right.
That's definitely something that's interesting for me too.
Well, I want to get back to what the original speaker was talking about. He needed 10 co-sponsors to go back to the pre-Ginsburg grab, go back to the 2008 rules. Who are the ones that you guys have right now, and who, I don't know if he feels comfortable saying that, who does he have, and who is in the pipeline to be a sponsor, because I don't want to go harassing people who are already committed. I want to harass people who have not committed. How's that?
Okay, Barbara, this is Mark Willis from Maine, National Committee Man. I have not spoken to Alaska. How about that? I haven't spoken to anybody in Alaska. So if you think that one or more of the RNC members from Alaska would co-sponsor this resolution, then go ahead and have them contact me.
I think if Morton Blackwell called Brow Seekins, that would be the most effective way.
Okay.
Right?
Well, and Morton, you know, Morton, I think, may have a different strategy going into this meeting. He may be trying to tweak some of the rules, not doing a full-blown rollback like he did in Los Angeles. I would kind of wait to see what he has planned because he may have his own angle on this outside of what I'm presenting.
Okay, because Ralph Seekins, I believe, is on the Rules Committee.
I think so. Yeah, I think so.
I think he's a very influential member of that committee,
and
I think that would be a person you would want to talk to.
Okay, yeah, because the Rules Committee, you know, is probably the most powerful committee of the RNC. So,
He seems to be very, very effective in getting things through that committee. And he is a good guy. A lot of people have argued with me that he's not, but he is a pretty good guy in when all things are considered, and I have tremendous respect for him. I don't always agree with him, but I do have a lot of respect for him. So,
okay, well, with regard to the resolution, this is a little different. Every state has three RNC members, the chair, the committee woman, and the committee man. And
right.
To sponsor it, all I need is one of the three. So
okay.
You can just take your pick and find the one that would be the most likely, most understanding, or the most likely to go ahead and sign on. I do have other states. I would not get into all that tonight on which states I have and or don't have. But I can say that I have not talked to Alaska yet.
Okay. So let me ask you then, is there a way to get a copy of this resolution that you're looking, want sponsored?
And the best way to do that would be to go to libertyrule.com. Because they have the actual resolution up on libertyrule.com. You can go there and look at the resolution and actually sign on as a sponsor yourself. Not official. This is just they have hundreds of people who've signed their name to it, saying yes, I agree with this. This won't, you know, this is not an official endorsement that would be binding on the RNC, but it would still be something that could be presented to the RNC and say, hey, wow, check out these hundreds or thousands of people across America who have signed their name to this resolution outside of just the normal three RNC members per state. So that is something you can do yourself.
Okay, well, that's what I'm wondering. And, I mean, there has been almost no memes on this or anything, or memes on this on Facebook. And, of course, that's where you are going to get the attention of a lot of people who would pick up the phone and call their RNC person. Now, I'm looking at libertyrule.com, so I would click on Maine's Willis taking on Ginsburg power grab rules. Is that it?
Yes.
Okay. So I click on that, and there it is. It comes right up. Good, 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 good. That way I have an idea as to what I'm looking at I can refer people to that when I'm talking about it so I sound reasonably intelligent.
And I'm sure – well, you know what, Barbara, and I think everybody who's listening tonight is thanking you for walking us through those steps. So you not only helped yourself, but you probably helped who knows how many people on the internet who are listening tonight. So you did your public service for the day.
Well, that's awesome, I guess. I guess.
A good deed for the day.
Well, I am not a young person. I am an older person. So when I look at these pages, sometimes people say, well, go to this website. And I go there. And I'm sitting there looking at the website going, and what do you want me to click on? You know? And in the case of the one that you just referenced, I had to scroll down the page a little bit to find it. It wasn't, like, obviously up there, which is fine. I mean, you know, I found it, so we're all good. I know it's not very interesting to talk about walking through that thing, but, you know, really to get people to do things, you sometimes have to walk them through. Click on this, click on that. And a lot of times people who are of the younger generation don't realize that. So my next question is this. How is what you're doing differs from what Morton wants to do?
Okay, well, what Morton did in Los Angeles was his attempt through the Rules Committee to get us back to the 2008 rules through the Rules Committee, and that was through his amendment, which had to have a majority vote to get out of the Rules Committee and then a 3/4 approval by the full body. What this is this is a resolution. This is a resolution that goes through the Resolution Committee. If you have 10 or more co-sponsors, then it goes through the committee up and out to the full body and for a majority vote. Now, resolutions are not technically legally binding, right? I mean, but if this were to pass and the RNC didn't go back to the 2008 rules, then there's a problem. Because if the majority, and what this does is, again, a lot, not only are you bringing a resolution to the full body for a majority vote, everybody of the 168 member body gets to vote, not just a few in the rules committee, but everybody gets to. But more than this, Barbara, is the process of getting it up and out. What we're talking about tonight and the next 3 or 4 weeks leading up to this meeting, you are educating people across America, educating people in the RNC. Wow, I didn't realize that the House rules controlled. Yes. And did you realize under House Rule 19 that this happened? Wow, I didn't realize that. Well, now you do. And once the RNC members are fully aware of what happened and they're fully informed, there's no more excuse.
The House rules is just horrible. I mean, nobody knew going down into Tampa that it was the House rules, and nobody had copies of the stuff. And fortunately, because of the storm, we had that extra day there. And so we were all on the Internet downloading copies of the House rules and sitting there. I mean, you had hotel rooms, people with laptops. Okay, so this is Tampa. It's the middle of a hurricane. Okay, I want to give you this visual. We're distributed in hundreds of hotels across, I mean, even within a state, you have people in different hotels, right? And so you had all of us. I mean, my cell phone died probably 5 times, and I was up between Skype and my cell phone talking to people, down looking at these rules, trying to figure out how these rules differed from the Roberts rules, feeling kind of angry because I went down there expecting Roberts rules and, you know, feeling like I had a bait and switch at the final analysis. Not only that, locking into House rules, what it does is it pretty much locks the Speaker of the House or somebody in Congress, in power, to running the convention.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, that means that you can't pick somebody who's not in power. So, for example, if we want to do some things that conflict with Johnny Merlo, John Boehner, then we're locked in. I mean, he's running the convention. You'll never.
Right.
I mean, the convention chair is hugely powerful historically.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, if you look at the history of the RNC, there was one time when the whole convention stripped the convention chairman of his power because of doing exactly what is going on right now, quite frankly. All right, and getting this convention out of the House rules and into the RNC rules and Roberts rules, as all the other conventions are, is a huge matter that I consider of import, because you know, people don't even have a grasp of the House rules. Not only that, but it allows them to make up stuff. Okay, like, and I'll give you an example at the convention. All right, well, they were saying that you couldn't. Okay, what is it when you object to an order? There was something when people were objecting or calling, you know, in a vote when you call
a point of order.
Point of order. Boehner said point of order wasn't part of the House rules, and yet we caught him on video on the House floor calling for point of orders and calling for all the things against Nancy Pelosi that he said that we couldn't. All right? I was furious when I got home and I saw that video. All right? Unbelievable. Saying that all these things, like point of order and you know, calling for the rule and all that stuff, you know, all this stuff was, you know, well, you can't do that. That's not in the House rules. And it turns around he did the same thing against Nancy Pelosi. I was furious. That was outrageous to sit there and simply lie to people like that.
Well, Barbara, you know, I guess a byproduct, what you're driving at is, and with all of this that we've been talking about since Tampa and everything that we've done, whether it be me running against rights back in January, you know, the Brian and Nicole fighting the battle, the grassroots for the rules, all of us together as a team, we're all in this together, right? We're all in this together. Everything we do, every step we take exposes that hypocrisy that you're talking about, because that's what you're talking about is the hypocrisy of of the powers that be versus those who are trying to play by the rules and win, obviously, within the guidelines of rules that that continue to be bent or broken or changed. So that is part of the byproduct of what this is this whole process is all about. That's not the goal. You want to expose hypocrisy right where it exists, but the goal is to succeed and get these back to 2008. But in the process, you are going to expose a lot of hypocrisy. And the longer this goes on, the more hypocrisy we're going to expose. So it's in everybody's best interest to man up and get these rules back to 2008 in Boston in August, or it's just going to be another story to be told after the fact, and it's not going away. It's not going away.
Well, the other thing I'm hoping you guys take on, okay? There's two other issues I'm really hoping in this particular session that you guys take on.
Real quick, I think that was a good segue to Michelle, who's in the chat's question. I want to get in there, and we'll get back with you, Barbara. And I do want to bring Nicole Rellis on because she's got some things to share with us tonight as well. So the question that Michelle had in the chat is she asked, so if the RNC does not heed the rules resolution this time, what is the next course of action? And thank you very much, Michelle Anderson, for your contribution there in chat. So I'd like to do this three ways. One, we'll have Mark, if you could answer that, and then Brian, I'd like you to chime in on that question, and then Barbie, if you'd like to, or you could continue on with what you were wanting, where you wanted to go. But I wanted to make sure that I got that question out from Michelle before the question disappeared in chat, which was very close to doing. So, Mark, could you speak on that for Michelle?
Yeah, Robert. I mean, I understand Michelle's question. So what happens is under the current rules that we're working under, these rules can be amended or changed until September 30th of 2014. That's if you want to go through Rule 12 and work through the 2012 rules like we did in Los Angeles. If you take that route and you go to try to amend the rules one by one, et cetera, you are going to hit a roadblock after the summer meeting of 2014. So you've got this meeting and three more if that is the route you take to change it within the Rule 12 structure of amending these rules, okay? And that might be what some people are planning, maybe Morton in the next meeting. I'm not sure at this point. We still have 3 weeks to go. That's one option. The other option is what we're doing right now with this resolution. Now, if it fails, then, maybe option B would be a 6 to 7 month education period. You regroup, you educate, you come back in the winter meeting of 2014, you take the same resolution, and you push it through again. And maybe it passes that time based upon a 6 or 7 month education process. Option C, which could be out there, which some people have I've heard on the periphery. I don't know how much truth there would be to this, but there could be potential litigation. It could go that route, I guess. People have been talking about that since Tampa, that this would be there'd be some kind of way that this would be litigated. I don't know everybody would want that to be prevented. So I think those are probably the most likely options of where this all goes. If this resolution doesn't pass, people continue to fight, A, within the rules themselves, B, another resolution with an education period, or C, I guess potentially somebody would litigate something about this, and maybe that would be something that people would do. Regarding the rules. I hope that answers Michelle's question.
Thank you, Mark. I appreciate it. I'm sure Michelle does as well. And if you have some elaboration on the question or anything, or have any other questions, Michelle, feel free to put it up in the chat. And also, I do see some other folks who do want to chime in. I see that they're on the switchboard here. I will be opening up the mics to the callers this evening. We do have an hour left of live time, but since you are on the phone of calling in, you will also be able to participate in the extended version of tonight's show if we get deep into it. But I do plan on having the folks in well before that. What I'd like to do is move over to you, Brian, and then back to Barbara, and then I would like to bring in Nicole, and then go ahead and start opening up to mics here for the callers. So go ahead, Brian, if you have any comments to what Mark said or any answers for Michelle's question, that'd be great.
Yeah, absolutely. One of the things, just touching on base with really what Mark said, is, I mean, he's right on the money there. But, you know, I don't think, you know, you have to take in consideration that we've been appealing to the same RNC members for the most part for the better over a year. And at some point, and I'm sure Mark could talk about this maybe, but at some point they get a little tired of the argument. And since it's a spicy argument, they get tired of it real quick. And it's real, it's hard for some RNC members to grasp, and separate the emotion that they may have felt or that they have learned to feel about these rules. And so without looking at them, from a different mind frame. So I don't know if, we could continue with another resolution later on, just because this, like I said before, speaks really to the heart of them, without any emotion or, just pointing to that specifically, that this is where everything broke down. The moment, we can talk about the back room stuff, but as far as the procedural reason, this is exactly where they broke down. And I would suggest that, in the future, if this was to die in the resolution committee, like our first attempt with the resolution to restore the GOP grassroots, then, I don't see this ever being resurrected. I think, unfortunately, people's attention spans on things are very short. And, that's true even for activists. So, a lot of people either forget or just don't want to remember. And, also, we are working, we already have been working with a lot of different constitutional lawyers and whatnot to basically look at our resolution and make sure that it's sound and, we will be submitting an accredited report on authenticity of our argument. And so, like I said, I think that this really offers, the opportunity for all RNC members to really understand what it was that broke down, why people are angry that the rules aren't being followed, rather than listening to the rhetoric that's been said from either one side or the other from the beginning. I've heard arguments, that the chair gets to decide to, those were just, calls of division from those, people up in the stands. So I know Nicole can really speak to the heart of the resolution a little bit more, so that's why I've been avoiding it. I think she deserves a lot of credit for all her hard work, and as does Mark. Mark has been, a tireless champion of all these causes, and he's, he's taken some bruises along the way, and he's never looked back, and he always stands for what's right. And one thing, whether you hate the Republican Party or not, there are some amazing individuals, even in the RNC. You have Ashley Ryan, you have Mark Willis, you have Diane O'Rourke, I could go on and on. A lot of them, they're good-hearted people. They just, they're not used to seeing anything other than what the chairman expects them to do. So it's a different kind of culture that, breaking into it and trying to change those attitudes, it does take time. Unfortunately, our time is running out. And, if we really would like to restore our party back to and get back to the basics and, and promote our platform and, win elections, then we're going to have to work real hard at changing these rules, and we're also going to have to work hard at the same level on our state level to make sure that the RNC doesn't go around the corner with these rules and basically change our state rules or endorse to change our state rules, which is already happening in a lot of caucus states.
And thank you very much, Brian. We'll bring it back to you, Barbara. And then after that, I'll be bringing in Nicole. Go ahead, Barbara.
Yeah, hi. I guess mine might take the discussion in a different direction. There's two areas where I think there is also worthwhile with some other concern, and I don't know if anybody is working on this or not. One of them is the whole amnesty issue that's before the Congress. I mean, I think, I don't know if there's any work in the past on the whole amnesty issue or rejecting amnesty at all. And with Reince Priebus being so out there on the amnesty issue, along with Paul Ryan and Marco Rubio, I don't know if there's been anything on that would be something that would actually wake up people tremendously if there was anything in the works on that. And my second one is about getting some teeth here. We're doing a lot of work on, you guys are doing a lot of work on rules. You guys are doing a lot of work on resolutions. It is all great stuff. I'm excited about it, okay? And I'm just going to give you an example of something, though. Like last time, unanimously, the resolution against Common Core passed, and I was so delighted because, I mean, this has been a huge fight, all right? But there's no teeth behind it. In other words, there is no way for me to, there's no way for you to, like, here's what I think needs to happen with all these resolutions, particularly with things like Common Core. There has to be a mechanism by which the party can deny campaign contributions or deny even a place on the ballot to individuals who do not support the party platform or the party resolutions or the party, you know what I'm saying? And we got to start having some teeth here. And I'll give you an example. We've got some governors that, quite frankly, are buying into this whole and I'll just use Common Core as an example, but we also have congressmen who are buying into this whole amnesty thing, one being the Speaker of the House, okay?
Mm-hmm.
If there was some way to tie fundraising and a spot on the ballot, if you will, even, perhaps, to these issues, that would have teeth. You get what I'm at? I mean, it would be, I mean, I'm not sure in the case of John Boehner that how much teeth it would have because, you know, as an incumbent congressman, he's got his own little pipeline of funds that extends from, you know, a long time of crony capitalism. But if you get down to some of these other governors, for example, or even school board candidates, you know, now you're cooking with gas, you know what I'm saying? I mean, if some candidate, somebody wants to run for some, like, for example, school board, which in some places are nonpartisan, okay, but if you can somehow or another put teeth behind these resolutions that they can't give money to candidates who, for example, support resolutions or support things that are contrary to the Republican Party, you then have teeth. Okay, because then as a grassroots activist, I have a perspective for bullying, if you will. I mean, I hate to call it bullying, but that's in essence what it becomes is bullying people who are running presumably as Republicans for example, a school board or a position that's relevant to school board governance. If I can sit there and withhold their withhold their campaign funds or support from the party apparatus because they are supporting a policy that is contrary to the perspective or the positions of the RNC or the state Republican Party, then I got some teeth. What's the potential for being able to do that?
Well, Barbara, this is Mark. I would say, first of all, you'd have to kind of break down how much money the RNC is actually giving to these candidates themselves.
But local fundraising efforts, too. I mean, you could put kibosh on all that.
Well, that's the thing. I mean, and that goes back to the county party level. If Boehner's from Ohio, I don't know exactly where in Ohio he's from, but the county he's from, if the county committee passed a resolution, a binding resolution on their county committee saying all county committee fundraising and funds will not go to you, Mr. Speaker, because unless you follow and do, you know, if you're make sure that you
right.
are against amnesty, that's the county level, and you could do it at the state level. And these resolutions, you're asking for teeth. Well, they would only have teeth for a couple of things. It's symbolic at the top for the platform. It's not binding in most cases, unless we really want it to be. But like I said, with the DHS ammo resolution, that gave some backbone to our guys on the Hill. So that was a little different. In this case, you're asking, this is more of a disciplinary measure. This is discipline you're asking for to keep these people in line, and we understand that. So it would be, well, the RNC could pass this resolution, but if there aren't any funds coming from the RNC to that candidate, then it's just going to be, well, we really want you to do this or not do this.
No, no. That's not what I'm talking about. I'm not talking about funds from the RNC. I'm talking about fundraising. So, for example, say you're a chairman of a district, okay? And say, for example, you've got a candidate who is, you know, out there saying how lovely the Common Core is, okay, or how lovely this amnesty bill is, or you know, whatever, that's contrary to the Republican Party. A resolution that precludes local parties, okay, from supporting those candidates can have an impact. And let me explain to you how, okay, if you will. If you take a look at how some state fundraising is structured, okay, you have to go through the party apparatus, if you will. If you go outside the party apparatus, you have to become a PAC. All right? So as long as you're within the party apparatus, you have to operate within the apparatus of the party rules. And if there is a rule from the RNC that gives some perspective, that gives people at the state level the ability to advocate for those rules and to pass them onward.
Well, Barbara, I would agree with you that I'm against Common Core, and I'm all for the Common Core resolution that was passed. However, we may depart. When I ran for RNC chair, one of the things I talked about was giving autonomy back to the states and not having the RNC push down from a top-down approach to the states. So what you're asking for is the RNC to pass a resolution to push down to the state saying, you need to do this or you will do this. I don't believe in that. I believe the state should be sovereign in how they act.
I agree in the sovereignty of the state, too. But if that is in place at the RNC level, what it does is for people in the party to bring these rules before the state central committee, it gives them teeth to do that.
Well, that's different. That's different. That's if the state committee wants
to... Did you run out?
I understand what you're saying is it gives them protective cover. It gives them protective cover to say the RNC has passed this resolution, and therefore we believe in that as well. And if it's good enough for the RNC, then it's good enough for us. And that's different. But still, it still goes back in the end. It still goes back to the state having to come up and make up its own mind about how they want to implement that.
Right. Well, I mean, for a state central committee member, okay, operating, and like as I mean, now that I'm no longer a district chair, I'm no longer a member of the state central committee. But one of the issues I will tell you that as a member of the state central committee, coming up with things that were, I don't want to say goofy or weird, you know, a lot of times if something was there that was already at the RNC level, even if it was a resolution, okay, being able to bring that and incorporate that into the state rules made it easier, if you will,
sure,
for a lone, out in the pucker brush state central committeeman to bring that kind of a rule change to the rules committee.
Yeah, I understand. I mean, a few years ago, the RNC passed a resolution rejecting Agenda 21, for example. and that gave a lot of states something to work with when they had to talk about that issue at the local level. So yeah, I think we're in agreement on that.
It took it out of the wingnut category and put it in the mainstream category.
Right.
Yeah.
So in that respect, yeah, it's something to point to. Again, I say in this case, it's a compass. It's pointing the party in a certain direction and saying that we're pointing at this degree north, that we are in belief that in the case we reject Common Core, we know every state's not doing that. Even Maine, they've adopted it.
Right.
So
well, I mean, and I guess what I'm saying is, you know, like for some of these guys, I'm going to be honest with you. For John Boehner, he'll look at it and chuckle, okay? Because I'm sure his fundraising is so beyond his state, it's not even funny.
Right. No,
but
Barbara,
if you take a look at some other, even a congressman looking at that and then listening to this amnesty debate, that's going to wake them up.
Right. Now, Robert and Barbara, I want to take a second here. I don't want to take up much more time because I know Brian and Nicole have a lot to say. But being that you brought up the issue of amnesty, and this is outside of the resolution itself, I have talked to RNC members across the country, north, south, east, west, and I've heard from Republicans here in Maine as well, that if the House of Representatives passes the Senate immigration bill or something similar, where it grants amnesty or the path to citizenship, whatever they want to call it today, that people have told me and others are hearing across this country, if Boehner allows that to happen and they're for it, they're done. They're leaving the party, and that's it. I'm sure you've probably heard the same thing too. That is what we're hearing across the country. So that is the message for Mr. Boehner and Mr. Cantor and the guys running the Republican Party on the Hill. You may want to succumb to all the arguments about this. And if you do, there's a great, great percentage of this party that is going to pack up and leave and never come back. You've been warned.
But then here's the issue. Where do we go to?
Well, I tell you what, Barbara, I've heard people say, that's it, I'm done. I don't care. I'll just base it on the candidate. I'll pay attention. If I see someone I like, I'll vote for them. If I don't, I won't. I don't care about being part of a party. I don't care about that. This is what they'll say. They'll say, it doesn't matter to me. This is what them telling me, right? This is what I'm hearing, that they don't care about the party. They care about the people who are running. They care about the principles of the person and the beliefs.
Here.
So where do we go to? We go nowhere, they say. We wait and see what happens. But if there was something for people to go to, conversely, if there was something out there, a vehicle for people to go to, many people have said, I will leave tonight.
And with that, for people to ponder over, I do at this time want to bring in Nicole. So, Nicole, I'm getting ready to open up your mic. And then after I open up the mic for Nicole, I have a number of folks on, and I will lead that up with 386. So, Nicole, thank you very much for coming to the show. How are you?
Good. Thanks for having me.
Oh, thanks for coming on.
Yeah, well, there were a few things, actually, that came to mind when Barbara was speaking. And the first thing is that I think Barbara might be interested in following, actually, is that Diana Orrick, a committee member from Nevada, and Brian could probably tell you a little more about this, but it's my understanding that she has a resolution that she's bringing forward that is very much in line with kind of what you're saying. And basically what it resolves to do is for the RNC to only delegate their campaign contributions to the national federal candidates to Republicans who have a conservative record. And so, it's kind of a funny thing, and I'm sure the debate on that will be very interesting. And I think it's going to be quite a show at this convention with Mark's resolutions that he's bringing forward, and then we're hearing from some of these other states like Diana from Nevada, bringing forward that resolution. And there's a resolution that is coming from North Carolina that resolves to tell all of our Republican House reps to defund Obamacare at the appropriations vote that's coming up, because that's another issue where they could do something about that directly. The Republicans can. They have control of the House. They have to delegate funding. They have to propose any funding. So they could defund the government in their next vote. The Senate can't fund anything if they don't first propose it, yet they last appropriations vote, they delegated the funding for Obamacare and sent it on to the Senate. And so these kinds of things, and I know a lot of people have a tendency to say, well, if non-binding, resolutions are pointless. And a lot of times they are. It really depends on how they are written and what they resolve to do, because the majority of resolutions that are seen do not resolve any specific action from the committee themselves that are passing the resolution. They might say, well, we, this committee, resolve that we support this idea or this issue. And it's like, okay, you know, how do you hold them to that? And so in a resolution, what I consider being the most important thing is to resolve some action that the committee is held accountable to, whether it is, you know, write all these Republican House reps a letter from the committee telling them this is how they need to vote, or whether, like with the rules resolution, saying we are going to, within this committee, revert to the former version of the rules of operation. And so they really can have teeth. And also, another point about that, people say resolutions, even though they're non-binding, if you resolve to do something within a committee, then the committee is fully expected to carry out that action. And, I mean, it would look very bad upon them if a majority of the voting members of that committee resolved to do something, like revert back to the previous form of the rules, and then it was not then enacted. And, you know, just like a common example that has been used, and this has, like, become my favorite example now ever since I heard from Jeremy Blosser. He said, well, a committee could vote to spend $20 on this item for use of the committee, and then the treasurer would be expected to write a check for that $20. If they didn't do so, then they're going against that resolve that was voted on. And the rules themselves, when they were passed at the National Convention, were passed as a resolution. It was a vote on, I believe it was John Sununu who said, I motion that we pass this resolution, and the resolution is to adopt the report of the Rules Committee. And so that in and of itself was a resolution that was passed, and that is how the rules were implemented in the first place. And let's see, there was, as far as the route of going the Rules Committee versus the Resolution Committee and kind of where we go from here within the party, it's, you know, Morton Blackwell, his effort in working through the Rules Committee is as much as we were going to be able to ever hope to accomplish going through the Rules Committee. And I don't mean, you know, the fact that they shut it down, we're never going to get any rule changes. What I'm saying is what he attempted to do was taking it all the way to amend Rules 1 through 11 and 13 through 25. Those are the only rules that they can amend in the Rules Committee. And so to go that route, our grievances are never going to be addressed. That's why I feel it is so important to bring it through the Resolutions Committee and say every single one of the rules, 1 through 42, revert back to their less egregious form. And if they – okay, another thing is, on going the route of trying to bring a rules amendment, like in the clip that was played at the beginning of this show, you heard some of the argument in favor of that amendment. It seems obvious that they would want to pass that, and that would be a statement. Passing that in and of itself would be a statement that we want grassroots input, that, you know, we want participation. But the funny thing is that the most prevalent argument against those rules, from what I heard, was that the opponents were saying, well, if we revert these rules back, then we're going against the grassroots, because those grassroots were the ones at the national delegation who voted to pass these rules in the first place. And so we can't undo what the national delegation voted to do. And so very clearly, you know, we all know that at the national delegation there was a real problem with how that vote was held. That is what this resolution, another thing that it's meant to address, the fact that the vote was not held in a legitimate manner. And so, you know, I'm hoping to see that discussion brought forward. If it can be heard, then I'm hoping that that's brought forward in a manner that kind of puts to rest this argument that we can't amend the rules because the national delegation voted to pass them in the first place.
And Brian, you want to make comment on that? And then I do have, before that, a comment here, if anyone wants to chime in this about later, is thank you. What grinds my gears, taking this from the chat, says Republicans need to start running against incumbent Republicans in every race. When they see the Republicans, voters will risk losing to get the dead weight out of the office, they'll shape up. So go ahead, Brian, if you want to make any comment on what Nicole just said. And also, Nicole, if you got when we were in chat, you know, over there in Facebook, you mentioned something about some correspondences about that. I don't know if you'd want to go on that tonight or not, but if you'd like to, feel free to do that. Do so. So, Brian, what do you think? You'd like to add
sure,
to that?
Sure, yeah. Well, listening to Nicole there, she really hit it on the head as well. You know, when we looked at this, you know, the last couple resolutions, and we looked at what Morton was doing, and I'm fully supportive of Morton. I'm fully supporting trying to get these rules back to something representative of pre-Ginsburg. But, you know, unfortunately, I also feel that his attempt doesn't really take it far enough, for my own personal opinion, because Rule 40 alone, you know, that is a huge roadblock for any grassroots candidate. And, you know, leading into a lot of the correspondence that we have been sending out, we've sent letters to the National Liberty RLC to endorse this effort. We've sent letters to John Tate from Campaign for Liberty. You know, we send every group that we could possibly, you know, send letters of endorsement to. We've sent that out. We're hoping to have, you know, a lot more people come on board. You know, we find that this is a fight that it doesn't just, you know, this is not something that you have to donate to. This is something that you actually have to, you know, pick up the phone, you know, pick up your pen and get your hands dirty. If you can make it out to Boston, they're making it a little bit difficult this time around. I don't think that they've ever been used to having so many grassroots activists attend these meetings. So there is now a fee for being a guest. I believe it's $50. And, you know, they've definitely upped the prices on a few of the other events and stuff that they offer. So, I mean, they are making it kind of difficult. But at the same time, if you can make it out there, you know, even if it's just for one day or you know, if you can stay for the 3 days, you know, it's really important to have a presence. It's really important to support these RNC members that are bringing forth these resolutions, and to sit in those resolution committees and rule hearing committees. I mean, they see your faces. It's a little bit tougher for them, you know, to backslide on supporting a measure. So, you know, it really takes, you know, some activism to really get involved. You know, somebody brought up the idea of memes. There are some out there on Facebook. I mean, they're definitely getting shared. This is something that, you know, you can't wait for somebody else to do it. There's a lot of people that are working on this, but there's never enough hands. So, you know, if you see a void in something, I would recommend that, you know, that could create something, or find somebody that can, or write something, write a letter to the editor, write comments on any Ryan's previous, or, you know, postings or RNC postings about the rules when they're asking you money. If you're being solicited by some national organization for money, make sure that they're actually going to do what it is that they say they're going to do. I mean, a lot of times, you know, people aren't afraid to fleece anybody else's pockets. We just, you know, this isn't something that as a scare tactic as much as it is supposed to be, you know, working in concert to, you know, make sure that everybody has a fair opportunity to be heard. So I'll leave it at that and appreciate
that,
you having me on the show.
Okay, well, thank you very much, Brian. And yeah, Nicole, if you'd like to share those, and then I want to start opening up some mics here for folks who have been waiting for a while. And I do appreciate and thank you of the folks on the line for me to open up and have you come in. Is there anything else you want to add on that, Nicole, before I open up the mics?
Yeah, and what we were discussing, okay, I got this email from Reince Priebus, which I think is hilarious because we're all pretty well versed in what happened at the national convention. The rules
mm-hmm.
were changed, and it was pretty obvious that it was in favor of their chosen candidate. And, you know, it in the future would work to disenfranchise other grassroots candidates as well. But listen to this, and I'll just read the first couple lines of it. There was a situation recently within the Senate in which one of Obama's appointments as head of like a labor committee or EPA, one of those, was stalled, and they couldn't get the vote to basically approve the candidate, and they were invoking filibusters and things to continue to further stall. And Harry Reid then threatened to go nuclear, is what they call it, and he was going to change the rules in order to get this candidate through, to lower the threshold and maybe make some amendments to the filibuster rules. And so Reince Priebus, the chair of the Republican National Committee, sent out this email and says, "Last week, Harry Reid moved one step closer to executing the nuclear option in the U.S. Senate, an unprecedented step that would erode a key check on President Obama's liberal agenda." And here's the line you got to really listen to. Check this out. "Unable to ram the president's nominees through the Senate unabated, Reid is looking to change the rules as it suits him." I'm reading that thinking, wow, how does it feel? Somebody wants to change the rules to suit their favorite candidate.
Wow. Talk about hypocrisy. Well, that's
unreal
incredible. Yeah, that's what, talk about hypocrisy. You know, the memory is short, I guess, or maybe he thinks that we're not paying attention, which, you know, as all you folks point out, is the grassroots is paying more and more attention every day. And what we also need to do besides just paying attention is we definitely need to get involved. And one of those ways is to check some of the things out at liberty-roll.com, so folks check that out. With this time, I'm going to go ahead and start opening up the mics. We're about the bottom of the hour here on the second hour of the show. But, of course, we do have the extended period, especially for those on the line. So I will open up the mics here, starting with 386. Thank you very much for coming into the show. How are you?
I'm doing great. It's me, Cindy Todd.
Hey, Cindy. Thank you very much for calling in the show.
No problem. Is Barbara still on the line?
Yes, ma'am.
I just somebody had made a point in chat. I can't remember who it was now, but they said until we're willing to lose some races by not voting for the, you know, establishment candidate, that we were never going to be able to change anything. And I, you know, that brought me back. It's so true because it brought me back to what we kept talking about up prior to the convention. how when we were faced with the prospect of having Romney as our nominee, that we needed to show them that we were willing to lose the race if we didn't get a real conservative again, because we had just been through this with McCain and Bush, Bush two times, and so, I mean, if that didn't show them that we were willing to lose in order to get the party cleaned out, I don't know what should have shown. I don't know what could possibly show them. I'm not sure that they care to know what our feelings are. I don't think they care if the party dies. They're all going to be part of the one big elite group of people who rule everything anyway. Anyway, now, Mark, I guess it was Mark that was saying somewhere along the line maybe some litigation options could come open. I had a question. What litigation options do we have when our party, I mean, because this is not a national or a federal or state or anything law-breaking issue here. This is our party. I remember Ron Paul supporters had filed a lawsuit out in California in District 9. I can't remember what that was about, but nothing came of it. So I'm thinking, what is our litigation options? What can we do? Is there anything we can do? This is just
Let me interject something right there, Cindy. That attorney also just recently died. So, you know, that is another thing to think about.
Sad.
Oh, yeah, Richard Gilbert died, yeah, last weekend.
God.
Wow. So, you know, I mean, I guess, you know, you're probably not going to have a lot of people cry about that in the RNC, but I just wanted to point that out. I'm sorry, I didn't mean to derail the discussion. But, I mean, you know, somebody wanted to do, I don't know, but if somebody wanted to pass a resolution recognizing his contributions, even if they were rather controversial toward liberty and freedom, that probably would open some eyes and get people thinking, you know?
Wow.
You know, that might be
that was like only a week ago?
Last weekend, yes.
He was on Sammy's show a time or two.
He's been on here. He's been on here a couple times as well.
You know, if nothing else, you know, if somebody wanted to sponsor a resolution recognizing his contributions to the liberty movement or to something like that, would probably be a nice gesture appreciated by his fiance. Although I'm not sure many people would support it. In the establishment, I'm sure many people in the liberty movement would.
Wow. I don't know if they'd even hear it.
By the way, I didn't agree with what he did, but that's not the point. The point is he did believe in what he did, and he did spend an awful lot of his resources out of his own personal pocket to pursue the rules and what happened with the rules. So, you know, I don't think it's untoward for at least somebody to introduce something like that. Like I said, I didn't agree with him on suing the state party chairs, but that because they weren't the people that held the power that he was trying to reverse. So that's why I thought it was a sort of misgotten action. However, I mean, it was well-intended. It was just the wrong action. But still, you know, I mean, he thought he was doing right in his own eyes. So, anyway.
Well, something had
now.
Done.
And Cindy, did you want Mark to make comment on that? Because I thought you asked him.
Is he still there, Mark?
Oh, hi. I just said I was on mute.
Okay.
No problem.
Did you hear my question, Mark?
What about the options for litigation would be?
Yeah.
Yeah, I've just heard some things, you know, just that somebody said, oh, well, you know, it could be litigated. I don't know what the what the actual options would be, or what avenues there would be, if any. I really don't know anything about that option C, other than some people talking on the periphery.
And let me kind of interject something here too. And in the end, you're not doing anything productive to sue them. You know, I hate to say it, but all you do is drive a wedge and irritate people. So that's really the final analysis. You're just better off walking away and starting your own party.
Well,
hate to say it.
Would Brian or Nicole want to add in on that before I bring in the next caller at 352? I see that you're next, and then after 352, I see 719. So would Brian or Nicole want to chime in on any of that before I have them come in?
Yeah, this is Brian. I don't think I don't know. You know, I'm pretty sure there's some hurdles you have to cross to bring civil litigation. I would think that this argument definitely has, you know, the key components to what exactly transpired and what went wrong. If there were people out there pursuing it, I mean, obviously this is a costly way to hold people accountable, but, it is an option. And if you really are concerned about the direction of our country, then one of the things that you also should be concerned about is the direction of our party. And if these rules are, continue to be as they are right now, there's a good chance, it's not even a good chance, it's guaranteed that regardless of who you're supporting in 2016, whatever candidate it is, if it's not the establishment pick, these rules are going to completely make sure that your choice is not going to be heard. It doesn't matter whether you're in the Liberty Movement, whether you're in the Tea Party, whatever hat you want to put on. It unless your candidate is the establishment candidate, you're not. It's not even a chance. They're already considering moving the convention up 2 months, and a lot of these rules actually make it more appetizing for consultants to make more money by making it a shorter primary season, and they're going to make millions. They stand to make millions. So you can only imagine why some of these rules are put in there. And, if we can't change them before 2016, then, or before 2014, at least through the RNC, then, I would have to venture to say that there is no other option outside of civil litigation, if at all possible.
Nicole?
Well,
My understanding, and I'm no legal expert, I don't vote to anybody here, is as far as I know, but I think that what the method of litigation would be is not saying, like trying to invoke election laws necessarily, because the Republican Party is a private club type of organization, but rather holding them to their own bylaws as a grievance, because my understanding is, and I could be totally wrong about this, so please correct me, but this is my line of thinking, that a private organization such as a party, the bylaws act as somewhat of a contract on the leadership and the members, and so for a breach of bylaws, such as what happened at the National Convention and the bylaws being the rules of the party that were broken, then perhaps litigation could be invoked for that type of measure. And, I think that's what Richard Gilbert was trying to do, is just to give a voice to some of these folks for their grievances. And I think a lot of those things had merit. I've watched some of his videos, and I couldn't argue them myself. So, but it's unfortunate. I had read about what happened to him recently, and I just say, may he rest in peace. And so, all I have to say about that.
Well, with this time, I'm going to open up 352. Thank you very much for coming to the show. How are you?
Yeah, hi. This is Harriet. Can you hear me?
Hi, Harriet.
Yeah,
yes,
hi.
I do. Thank you very much for calling to the show. And also, I'd like to put a special thank you out to you as well, Harriet, as well as for those such as Cindy and Arlene if you're out there. I know Cindy is, but Arlene, if you're out there listening or going to listen to the archives and all the other folks as well who shared the link tonight and the number out tonight to the folks who want to send a special thank you to you for sharing that with people out there on Facebook. So that includes you, Harriet. So go ahead.
Thank you. Yeah. Hi, Mark. I was a little bit late in getting in. I appreciate your message.
Oh, you're welcome. You're welcome.
Yeah, I'm looking at this from another prospect. And I appreciated and I listened to what everyone said tonight, and I did find that there is education that I acquired tonight. Thank you, Nicole, and everyone. And I still have a long way to go with acquiring more education. But what I want to be active. So what I did was I belong to my Tea Party, which we have a very wonderful Tea Party in town, and it is conservative. I joined the GOP and the RNC. I went to a couple of meetings, and I liked what I heard, and I liked where they're going. And so I've been busy contacting my committee man, my committee woman in my state, and sending emails and writing messages. And I find that to be effective. And by surprise, I've been elected to a position of precinct committee woman in my district.
Congratulations.
So I will thank you very much.
Very good.
I had no one oppose me, is the truth. But anyway, so I feel that I have to do something other than to stand around and talk and try to rationalize who did what, who said what, how things are going to go, because I'm not going to be at the meeting, and so I'm not going to have any voice. And so on the blogs and on the programs and everything, I am going to be, I have a program, a platform that I'm outlining, and I'm going to ask people to help out, and we can work together. And people in any of the states that want to contact their committee man, their committee woman, whatever, I'm willing to help them out, because I can contact the committee people in the state as well as they can. I can show what you can write. Also, I would like to go to Boston, so I am trying to get a little group going together. I don't know if I can, because I have a job besides. But that is a suggestion, that if people in the Boston area can get to the meeting, it is worth the $50 fee if you go for one day, because you are showing up in support of passing the rules. We are in such a dangerous situation in our country, because if we don't pass something, then we're not going to have a fair and a free election. And that is what the whole issue is, and that is what I am concentrating on right now. I'm working hard and getting people in my community, thank God, are mainly Republican. So I don't have it difficult, but I'm going to be making speeches. I'm going to be doing town halls. I'm up till 3, 4 in the morning working on the computer, working on ideas. So I don't know any more than what I can tell you from my heart. We have to be involved other than the talking. We are up against a potential disaster. So that's all that I can say tonight, and I hope that people will think about this. It's fun to contact your committeemen and your congresspeople. It's so they know you and you know them. we've got to work together. We cannot say you're Democrat, you're Libertarian, I'm a Republican, and split everybody in three ways, because there's not going to be anything ending. Thank you for listening, and I hope that I have helped with some ideas at least. Look for my blogs and my posts throughout the network and see what the suggestions I come up with and the success and the not successes that I come across, please. Also, I want to find out the name of the hotel, and I want to contact the hotel to see what the availability is that people can fax to the Congress people during the meeting to the hotel. Someone gave that idea to me. Huh?
What's the name of your blog, and how can folks get to it? If you could send me a link, what I could do is I can, a couple things. I can put a link to it on the Barge Logic Political Talk webpage, on the Get Involved page
okay.
of the website. And also, we can put the send me the link, and I can put it on the Barge Logic Political Talk group and,
okay.
and page as well. So, but for those folks who are out there listening live or on the archives, who'd like to look at it before that, is there a web address that you could give us?
My home, my private one.
Well, for your blog, for folks to check out your blog, or is that something that we're working on and not you don't have the sign up for it yet?
Oh, I have my personal one at home, and then I have my page on the network on Facebook. I have a page on Facebook.
You have a blog on or page on the Facebook?
Yes, yes.
Oh, okay, great. Okay, well,
under Harriet.
That?
Yeah, under Harriet, it's a nice page. And then also what I'm going into later is I'm going to be opening up an enrichment program. Because I think people are worn out and tired of everything, and I think that if we can have a little enrichment program going, which I will announce later on, it would be something, you know, to keep your mind. I'd love to have everyone join, and we can kind of have a little enrichment going along with all of this. But right now, people, please, we are in such a dangerous situation in our country. We have no leadership in Washington as far as our president goes, and so we're in here alone, and we have to do the best we can. And if the rules can be changed where we can have free and fair elections, I think that will help. And the only way that I know is to get in there and work.
Well, thank you very much, Harriet, and
you're
welcome.
Appreciate
it. And,
thank you for giving me the time. Thank you for giving me the time.
Oh, you're welcome anytime, Harriet. You know, you're welcome to come on anytime, as is everyone else. But I do see that we have about 12 minutes of live time, so, of course, we do have the extended period for those who can stay. And I know there's things that maybe you guys want to chime in on with what Harriet was just talking about. But first, I would like to let someone I know has been on hold for a while, and I'd like to be able to bring them in. So, area code 719. Thank you very much for coming to the show. What's on your mind?
Hi.
Hello.
You're speaking with me, right?
Yes, with you. Who is you?
Yes. My name is Barbara Anderson, and I am from Alaska. Do not confuse me with the other lady. That's Barbara Haney
okay.
from North Pole,
right.
Alaska. And I was going to give you an update on what you guys have been speaking on, and I had a question for Nicole at the end. And I also have a website that we are starting, the Grassroots up here in Alaska. The situation in Tampa, yes, it was, everybody knows what a mess it was. At the time when we were down there, many people were working on getting this minority report passed around before the call came to the floor to vote. And I know you guys remember that, Brian and Nicole. And
mm-hmm.
anyway, we had a copy of that. And I don't know, maybe Barbara Haney doesn't remember, but I gave her a copy of that on the floor of the convention myself so she could read that. But I was thinking I should bring her up to date because – in May, I did submit a complaint to Ralph and our national committee man, national committee woman, and our chairman about the rules, and I had as many delegates from Tampa that went would sign on for it, and I noticed she didn't sign it, and it was written that they should revert those rules back to 2008. So from that standpoint, we submitted that to the meeting in May in Homer and got no response. We submitted it again electronically July 4th, and we haven't heard anything back. I did send them a personal email asking them to please sponsor this along with what Brian had sent out, and I've heard no response yet. So Alaska is in the know of what's going on with this rules, and they have not answered, and I don't believe that they will, because when we were down in Tampa before we left, we did speak with them about this specifically, and they told us in the lobby of the hotel that Alaska was staying in that they fully complied with, they adopted the rules, and they explained to us that that ruling was just fine, and they were fine with that. So I have not been able to get any kind of a response from Alaska leadership that they're going to sponsor this. But I could be wrong. Maybe.
Can I speak to that
thing?
Can I speak to that, please?
Real quick, Barb. Sure, Barbara, but real quick, because I do see there's only about 8 minutes left of live time, and I do see folks in the chat and be listening elsewhere. If you'd like to listen in or chime in on the extended version here, because we will be going past the live time, and that's great, of course, as always, but you can call in at area code 347-945-7428. If that's you just want to listen to the live portion or want to chime in as well, both is appreciated. And if not, you can always hear the rest of the show by going to the archive, which is available immediately after the show. Thank you much, Barbara. So, go ahead, Barbara Haynes.
Okay, so I never received it to sign it, which is why I didn't sign it. However, I was made aware of a copy of it while I was in the middle of a discussion with Mr. Seekins on some other matters, and this was before the meeting, and it was my impression that he was supporting it. When the vote record was presented to me by others, I believe Cindy Todd actually had the vote record, all of Val's votes indicated that he did what he said he would do. He would support them, and he did. He voted for them. And I very much appreciate everybody pitching in on that, because it wasn't me. All I did was he actually made me aware of it. He asked me what I knew about it, and I said I thought it was a good thing. He said he was going to support it. And I don't want to say that's that. I wish I could tell you that there were meeting notes, but because there was not a quorum at that meeting of GOP Golden Heart, that there's no meeting notes. Obviously, if there's no quorum, there's no meeting notes, because, you know, it just becomes a social visit at that point. But he did indicate that he was supporting it, and that's all I can tell you, Barbara. I mean, it was never presented to me to sign, and actually it was Ralph that showed me the stuff, not you guys, and I was supportive of it. So, you know, Ralph and Cindy Todd, who I believe it was Cindy Todd, I had to go back and check my messages, actually sent me the records of the votes, okay, from those resolutions. And when I looked at Ralph Seekins, he supported it every time. So I'm not, and now I don't want to be accused of supporting some rhino establishment guy. All I can tell you is I asked him about it. You know, he made me aware of it. I asked him about it. He said he was supporting it. I said that was a good thing. He went down there. He voted for it. The record shows he voted for it. I don't know what else people want.
Okay, and my question for Nicole was...
Are you still... Well,
yeah,
I just had a message on Facebook from Nicole. You still there?
Oh, yeah, I'm here.
Oh, okay. Oh, you're talking to the other folks.
Yeah.
Real quick,
Brian,
I wanted to say Mark O'Brien had to go, so thank you very much for those two for... coming in, and I told him I'd say the goodbyes to the audience for him, so they had to run. But go ahead, Nicole. Thank you.
Was there a question?
Well, no, I thought you were going to chime in about for something. I thought that you had, they addressed you, so that's what I wanted to bring you in.
Oh, no, no.
The other Barbara, I'm sorry, go ahead.
Can I say something? Because Barbara did mention the voting record, and I do remember posting that on my Facebook page. If anybody that's on my Facebook page wants to go back and see it in the old-timey, I think everybody can get back there as far as they want to go. But, yeah, I remember us talking about that too, Barbara, that I think he did.
Yeah. And so I saw no more reason to pursue the matter because he was already aware of it. In fact, he's the one who made me aware of it. I supported it. And as far as I knew, he voted for it. And then I got actually because somebody else in Illinois, one of the other activists there, actually confronted me about it. And I said, wait a minute, I was given the voting record I was given said he voted for it. Because he was kind of poking fun at Ralph. And it was like, wait a minute, he voted for it, as far as I know. I mean, you know, he may be an establishment candidate, but an establishment guy, but, you know, he's voted for the reforms. And he isn't any more happy with the Romney consultant sort of the Ginsburg power grab than anybody else. You know, so you can't fault, he's not, as far as I know, he's on our side.
Well, it looks like the other Barbara from Alaska, it looks like she's left a call. There are still a few minutes for her to call back in if she'd like. I don't know if the call got dropped or if she just left. And I thought she had something that she was going to address or ask you something about, Nicole. That's why I was going to open up the mic for you. But before we continue on, I do see we have just a couple minutes left of the live version, so I'd like to thank everyone who has come to the live show tonight, and thank you for listening to the archives if you do that, which I said will be available immediately after the show, and just share the link with folks. I really appreciate it, so they can listen to tonight's topic too, and of course, even more importantly, is get involved, because as everyone's pointed out, how important this issue really is to the grassroots. Thank you very much, and check that out. So, Nicole, I want to open it up to you because I thought she addressed your name as well. I wanted to bring it up. Did I hear that wrong?
Yeah, I think she must have got dropped from the call. One thing on this topic of the rule changes and the party structure, and, I'm beginning to wonder kind of really what the difference is, and I know we have ideological differences, of course, but when Democrats and Republicans, when the party is acting the same way and you don't see a lot of those ideological differences expressed in the legislation that's passing and in what's being advocated for, it's really difficult to defend that there even is a difference between the two parties. And here's one fact that illustrates this, okay? So Ben Ginsburg, Mitt Romney's campaign attorney, is one of the ones, he's pretty much considered the face of the corruption of the rule changes, as far as the one who had the hand behind the scenes implementing a lot of these rule changes. And look at what that did to the convention, how it disenfranchised so many people. Well, in Obama's State of the Union address earlier this year, he said that he was forming a new executive agency or commission. It's a commission on election administration, and he appointed Ben Ginsburg as co-chair of this commission. And, he said that the purpose, his stated intention for this commission is to take it to the precinct level and make elections easier, make the lines shorter, and who knows what it is he's talking about he might be wanting to implement in order to do this. But the fact that he appointed Ben Ginsburg and wants to make these changes at the precinct level with how elections are held, and I think this really speaks to a lot of what Harriet had brought up earlier as well in transparency in elections and making sure that elections are held fairly. This is something, it's like we don't even know how to keep ahead of them when they're forming these executive agencies like just for this specific purpose. And I am scared to death to think that what was done at that RNC convention, Obama liked it so much that they're going to try to implement this on the national level at precincts across this nation.
And I do have the other Barbara from Alaska back on. I'm waiting for the mic to open up, and it hasn't already. Thank you very much for calling back. I guess it just dropped your call.
Yeah, are you there?
Yes, I'm here. We're here. And,
okay.
No, before I have you chime in, I want to make sure, were you finished with that, Nicole? Because I really would not want to interrupt.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. Go ahead.
Okay, I just wanted to make sure. Thank you. It looks like the call got dropped, and thank you very much for calling back into the show.
Oh, well, thanks for having me back. I know you have a lot of numbers. But anyway, I wanted to get to the point. My question was, Nicole had stated that they said that there was nothing you can do about it anyway because it was voted to pass in the first place by the delegates on the floor. But the problem is we all know that that vote was tainted and it was recorded incorrectly. How do you go back? I mean, there are so many malfunctions at that convention that in order to put everything in a proper order, we would have to redo the convention. I mean, I just don't know, and I don't see happening.
I mean, they unplugged mics, they blocked mics, points of what we were lied to about the rules. I mean, the whole nine yards. The whole thing was a psych-op.
Well, I was talking about Nicole. I was talking about the question Nicole had. That's who I was talking to.
Okay. Well,
Nicole, go ahead.
And that is, I mean, that's exactly the point. They used this argument to say, well, the National Convention vote is so sacred, we can't change these rules because the National Convention voted for these rules. And that's what actually this resolution that's being brought forward at the August meeting, Mark Willis is bringing forward, specifically outlines why that vote of the national delegation was invalid. And, it goes through and says, well, this rule was broken, this rule that allows for debate to be had over the question, this rule that allows for delegates to send this resolution back to committee or send the question at hand back to committee for further consideration. So it outlines specific rules that were broken in the passage of the Rules Committee report at the national delegation in the first place. And, like we were talking about, the resolve is to go back, and actually with this resolution, it doesn't resolve to go back to the 2008 form of the rules. It resolves to go back to a 2008 form and then subsequently amended, so it keeps the amendments that were made from 2008 to 2012 until prior to the Rules Committee report going to the Standing Committee on Rules, the National Committee Rules, the RNC Rules Committee, prior to their amendments, prior to the Ben Ginsburg amendment. It resolves to revert back to those rules.
So that would have been the 2008, is that what you're talking about?
The 2008 rules, and then also the suggested amendments that were made to those rules, because from 2008 this year is the first year that the Rules Committee has been able to actually make amendments to rules, and that was a new power delegated to them with this new Rule 12. Well, in 2008, I mean, this isn't exactly a new problem, but it's probably the most attention that has been called to this problem that I've seen. The fact that presidential candidates and their campaigns have this level of input over the Republican Party. So in 2008, this was seen from the McCain campaign. They amended the rules as well to suit their purposes. And in the years since then, the Standing Committee on Rules, Morton Blackwell and those folks, had been making suggestions for changes that opened up the party to greater participation. And then the week before the National Convention, the National Convention Committee on Rules got together. And that is not the same as the, like, Standing Committee on Rules, who had made all those suggestions for changes in the years prior. The National Convention Committee got together just that week before Ben Ginsburg basically took all those suggestions that they had made, threw them out the window, you know, did things to try to favor Romney and future candidates and consultants, and then those were what was ended up passing.
Okay, well, if I can give you, this is the last comment I'm going to make because I know there are other people who need to speak. In the case regarding the delegates against the RNC, if you were to type that in, Richard Gilbert submitted that. It says Barbara Anderson et al. Versus the Republican National Committee. And I have got to tell you, I was so scared to do that. However, I understood after talking to him and I listened to his explanation on what he was doing.
Mm-hmm.
He was vying for the delegates, not just Ron Paul delegates, all delegates at the Republican convention to vote their conscience. Because the RNC up
right,
to that
right.
point had proved themselves to be corrupt, and they were a criminal organization. And had the delegates been allowed to vote their conscience, I want to put this bug in you guys' mind, this whole entire convention would have been different. We would have had the force and the energy to not allow the rules predicament to even have happened. We would have been
mm-hmm.
empowered with our right to be a voice, and we would have been all on the same level. And I know because the day of the court, after the court hearing, Richard gave a radio interview with Jerry Davis, and I listened in, and he said that the judge at the time asked the RNC lawyers, the attorneys had no problem telling the judge that they don't mind breaking their own rules, and the judge asked
mm-hmm.
them, would you please reiterate that? Do you remember that? And Richard said, it just amazed us all in the courtroom that they said they don't mind breaking their own rules and they'll do it if they want to. And he purported that perhaps maybe this judge was wanting them to state that again, to put it on record. And,
mm-hmm.
you know, of course, we all know what happened. We were unable to get that case. You know, it wasn't a win or lose situation with that case. It was, we were merely wanting a statement from a federal judge telling the RNC that we would like to be allowed to please vote our conscience. Had nothing to do with suing the RNC. When people say that, they don't know what they're talking about. We were merely asking a question and a permission to please be granted that we vote our conscience, and that has everything to do with
mm-hmm.
it, and that's what Richard Gilbert stood for. And so that was my input on all this, and I thought maybe that could help and bring some light to some of it. But I appreciate what all you guys are doing, and Brian, I still want your snail mail address because I told you I'll sponsor your fee to go to the Boston meeting, and I mean it.
Which, yeah,
I'm
yeah,
sending
him
a message.
Brian had to go, but
you
could, yeah, you could probably reach him at libertyrule.com. Send him a message there. Yeah, and I remember that as well because we covered the lawsuit here in the show, and I have an audio clip. It's a long one, so I won't play it. To what is like a 60-minute clip, so I won't play it at this time. I recall that, and I recall those court cases. What has been said, and we talked about that. You know, length here on the show. I think Nicole, you may have even been on that show when we talked about it. So
I'm not familiar, but you know, Barbara, I would like to talk to you to learn more about that. I don't know if that would be a route that I would be involved in if it goes you know, beyond the RNC and to the litigation route. But I think whoever leads that effort, if that is what happens, then certainly, you know, it would be good for them to speak to you and figure out what has already been done in that route for, and, you know, what has been learned from that.
Well, and that's the whole point. The reason he had to do that was because they were breaking their own rules blatantly in front of the whole United States of America, and all of the people's voices not being heard. And I mean, what are we going to do? Sit around while we just wait to go to Tampa and let them break their rules on us? I mean, that's what they ended up doing. But at least it was an effort and a concerted effort and a brave move on his part to at least get this out in front to where we could ask the question, may we please vote our conscience? That's all we were asking.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think that we should take, you know, I do not think that one approach is better than another. And people who are done with this two-party system and who say that they are just, you know, going independent or opting out of the system completely and not putting any more of their effort into it, I totally understand, and I don't fault them for that either. I think that we need all different approaches in our pursuit of integrity and representation. And going litigation route is certainly one that we need to consider probably more than we do.
Very well said. Now,
okay.
Nicole, I thought when I had Richard Gilbert on, maybe it was someone else, I'm sorry, it was some time ago. You know, I mean, it was back before November of last year. But I thought you're on this year. I guess it was a different one when I had him on. So, oh, you know what? It was Pepper.
Hey,
her last name was Pepper. He was on. I'm sorry. Go ahead. Go ahead, ladies. I was just trying to recall the show
I have friends actually. I think some of the guys from Maine, if I'm not mistaken, were. Like a co-complainant on that?
Yes, I know that Landon St. Peter was one because I talked with him down in Tampa too. And I don't remember all of the others, but I do remember Landon was in one of them.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, well, Cindy, we haven't
listened
for a while, so if you'd like to chime in, I'd like to open the mic to you.
Well, I had some notes, and I can't find my notes anymore.
Oh, no.
Anyway, basically what I wanted to bring up was that we had a lot of young people join in with the Republican Party to try to get somebody elected that was going to get rid of Obama. And the Ron Paul young people decided to put their time and their effort and their money behind him. Some say it was just because he made some mention that he might legalize pot, but I don't think it was that. I think it was because he was truly liberty-minded, and very obviously so. And they had trouble trusting Newt because he did seem like an establishment candidate, which those of us who know him, that wasn't the case. Right. Those of us who knew him very well knew that he is not anything but establishment.
Right.
And you know, I just sent you how many links.
And that's why the establishment was so afraid of him. Mm-hmm.
Right, exactly. I just sent you a whole bunch of links about how the establishment turned against him. So please don't call Newt Gingrich an establishment candidate, please. Anyway. But here we were, and Priebus and Boehner and Romney and Ginsburg and all these guys had a chance to do something really wonderful for our party, which was to enlist a new generation, establish a groundwork for getting them involved, and they decided, and I believe knowingly decided, very cognizantly decided that they wanted to kick those people in the butt and say, you came in the door here, you try to do something, but we don't like what you're doing, so we're going to kick you right back out the door again. It was a bad decision, and that's what Morton calls it, a bad decision. But basically what it was is I think it was a very calculated decision, and they knew exactly what they were doing, and they were saying, we're never going to get rid of this Republican Party until it ages out. That means we've got to keep the young people out, and we'll have to do whatever we can to hold them down. And I just, maybe I'm just thinking in sinister ways, and I'm a skeptic, and I'm a conspiracy theorist, but when you look at my level of intelligence, and most of us, our level of intelligence, most of us aren't nuclear physicists here on this show, but we have common sense, and we know how to research things. And we do think, and I think a lot of us have organized thinking. And yet we could come up with the severity of their mistakes. We could figure that out. You cannot tell me that they could not figure that out. They did know, and I think the proof of that they do know, and they do know exactly what they're doing. The proof of that is that we know. We thought it out. We can see it. And so that tells me they know exactly what they're doing. And so that's what scares me about this party. That's why I'm trying very hard to do something about these rules changes, go back to grassroots power. And it's the only reason, that's the only reason that I'm still in this party, is because if we can get together, if the grassroots does stand up against this elite takeover, then maybe we can get our party back and once again run a Reagan conservative type person and get some changes done in this country. Okay, if they go through this year, through 2014 election, and through 2016 election, and then they still do nothing about this rules stuff, and that they keep running and supporting all these establishment-type characters instead of true liberty-minded conservatives, constitutionalist conservatives. If they can't bring themselves to elect and support constitutionalist conservatives, then I am done with the party for sure. I'm surprised I'm in it this far, because I swore right after the convention that I was going to have nothing more to do with this party. But then I began to hear Morton Blackwell talk about his resolutions and Mark Willis talking about it and running against Priebus, and I got excited, and I got my people here in my county excited, in our Republican Club and our REC. And I think some people, you know, we signed a resolution, and we did some things to try to make our voice heard. And yet, I don't know that we're being heard. Even if they know that our county and, you know, a dozen or so other counties in Florida are behind these new resolutions to go back to the original rules, the 2008 rules, even if that was to happen and we put all kinds of pressure on them, it could be that they still ignore us. And that is obvious. It is so obvious that they still ignore us, that they have no intention of ever going really, truly to conservatism, and they're going to stay with their crony capitalist, big money donors, and those are the people who are going to run our party and run our country. And see, just right now, the way I see it, we have two factions fighting over control of our country. It's the Democrat Socialists, or I should just go out and say Communists, and the Republican crony capitalist. Those are the two people fighting for control over our country right now. Unless we, the grassroots, wake up enough people that we can take back our power from those people, then our nation is toast. We just have no chance. We have no chance. And knowing Obama and his way of doing things, we'll end up in some sort of a military state, civil war type situation.
Well, it's like, you know, it's like what Tessa said in the chat, and I can't help but to agree with her, is where, you know, she puts, they don't want our participation. They want us to, I hope I'm reading the chat, they want us to do the grunt work and give money. And, you know, and the conservatives in the Republican Party are the legs of the elephant, you know, to use that analogy. And if, you know, what's going to happen if you cut off those legs to the elephant? Well, it's not going to go anywhere, is it? I mean, it's just going to it's going to lay there. And I think the 2012 election was a good illustration of that. And I'd like to bring in the other two ladies to chime in, but I do see some folks on the switchboard who are listening in. If you just like to stay just listening in, that's fine. But if you'd like to chime in, just hit the one on your number dial, and we'll be opening up your mics. So if either Barbara or Nicole would like to chime in on anything that Cindy said, go ahead. And we'll go with Nicole and then Barbara, if you guys want to chime in on anything that Cindy just put out.
Well, you know, I've been thinking a lot lately about what in the world it is going to take to wake people up to these things, like Cindy was saying. I mean, it's almost, you know, on a regular basis these days, I'll read a piece of news and I'm thinking, am I still in reality? I mean, everybody else doesn't have a problem with this, but, you know, all these, and the things that are coming out, it's like, we have discussions, we've kind of, under the surface, known about these things, but it's like, a lot of it, we would be accused of being conspiracy theorists for things that are mainstream news these days. NSA, on all this information they're storing about us, this in-depth level of spying that's going on. Here we have in North Carolina, and I'm sure all over the United States at this point, these license scanners with GPS that are reading all these license plates going down the road and storing the vehicle the location and time that you're, you know, at that location. Even engaging in conversations with people about these things, like, you know, I am experiencing what I see firsthand to be really police militarization, because in a simple being pulled over for a traffic violation or something, nowadays is a hostile experience. And, you know, having conversations with people about these things and the level of justification that there is, well, you know, yeah, they're storing all this information, but it's for our safety. I'm sure they know what's best. Hearing these types of things, I'm just thinking, what more is it going to take?
Mm-hmm.
So, I agree that that's really, we've just got to, you know, keep working to educate and wake people up to what's going on. And I don't know if it's just that really people aren't paying attention, and so they're not even seeing these things, or there is just that level of disconnect with the policies and how far they're taking us from what this country was meant to be.
I think it's multiple things. I'll chime in here for a little bit, and then we'll bring it over to Barbara. You know, I think it's a multiple things. One is that there have been a lot of folks. When you look at 2010, you know, and I'll bring up the Tea Party, for example, and I'll even use, you know, Occupy Wall Street, you know, or the Occupy movement, which, you know, it was still a large amount of folks trying to get, you know, get across to the elites. And I think what a lot of folks, they're tired. I think that's one. One is they're tired, is they feel like, you know, they have gone out, they've had work, and they didn't see any fruits. They didn't see much, if any, fruits to their labor. And I think, you know, I think a lot of them, you know, think it's just a waste of their time, it's a waste of their money, waste of their efforts, that, you know, the system's so against them that there's really nothing they can do. And so why put forth the effort for that when they can just put forth the time and resources towards, you know, their own personal circle, their own personal life, you know, whether it's, you know, job, you know, career, hobbies, you know, what have you, family. And then in the other sense is I believe, and this is, might sound kind of conspiratorial, especially with the Obamacare and the immigration reform going on, is that it's being purposely done to, one, of course, the other thing, such as the Zimmerman case, and I really don't want to get much into that, which is becoming a distraction against all the other things going on. But also is, you know, going back to the Obamacare and immigration reform, is that these are two things that are, you know, going to drastically, as Obama put it, you know, change the face of America, or you know, you put it something that way, fundamentally change America. And these things are fundamentally going to change America in ways that it's going to change, you know, the American way of life with the coupling of Obamacare and immigration. Is a lot of folks are going to be have to work two part-time jobs in order to make ends meet. Just because, you know, what Ted Cruz was talking about when he was on the Senate floor, talked about the reform bill and linking Obamacare with it. And that, and not, when we're not talking about, you know, two 20-hour part-time jobs, is that, you know, they'll have, you know, maybe two 32-hour, you know, or 28-hour part-time jobs where folks are just not going to have the time nor the energy in order to pay attention to what their government is doing. And, you know, just not to sound conspiratorial, but I think it's being purposely done so folks, you know, will not be involved and participate.
Barbara? Well, there's another thing. There's another thing going on too. Can I speak to that?
Yeah, real. Yeah, go ahead, Cindy. And then I want to get Barbara's take in all of it.
Okay. This happened just today. A guy, an electric company guy, came out to put on a new electric meter on my house. Apparently, our old smart meter is now dead, and we needed a new smart meter. Well, you know that I've been getting my information together. I'm going to have a neighborhood meeting, and we're going to write our power company and tell them to come and get these smart meters off. Okay, well, the guy comes out here, and I see him out there talking to my husband, and I asked him, I said, you're going to put another smart meter on? I want an analog. And then he goes, I mean, you should have seen him roll his eyes. Oh, no, who you been talking to? And then he looked at my, I start going in on, you know, why and all the stuff I learned about smart meters. And he looked over at my husband and he goes, boy, you got you one here, don't you? And do you know that my husband agreed with him? You see, I've been sitting here on my computer hour after hour after hour learning all this stuff that they're doing to us, finding out what our own party's doing to us, working so hard in this county to bring conservatives back to our county. And all he can do is think that I am a silly person who just is a conspiracy theorist and I don't know what I'm talking about. And I'll tell you why. Because he watches Fox News and he hears Bill O'Reilly and all those other jerks on there saying how there's this segment of the Republican Party that's dragging them down because they get too conservative. They go too far to the right and they just make everything crazy and they're conspiracy theorists and all this and they're all listening to that. All these Republicans think that they're going on Fox News and they're getting the truth. But what they're getting is they're getting brainwashed into considering anybody a true constitutionalist is a conspiracy theorist. That's where it's coming from. That's why people aren't getting involved. They're being lulled to sleep, and they're being brainwashed into thinking that if you try to press against the elite Republican Party, you're just going to It's ridiculous. You're silly. You're a conspiracy theorist. You're ridiculed. So that's one reason people aren't getting involved.
Well, yeah, and Bill O'Reilly, you know, he was one of the first folks who was trying to, you know, at least on Fox News, who was putting it out there that Mitt Romney, you know, amazingly enough, was the only candidate that could beat Barack Obama, which, you know, come on, I mean, he's actually the exact opposite, where he was the absolute worst candidate to go against Obama. I mean, I wouldn't say almost any other candidate could have beat Obama other than Romney, but I think he probably was one of the folks, if not the person, who was the worst candidate to go against him, you know, for many reasons that, you know, we could talk about, you know, later on the show. But Barbara, I want to bring you in, so let's go ahead and do that. I want to chime in on anything that we said here.
I have some input. This is Barbara Anderson from Seward, Alaska. Regarding what you're talking about right now.
Oh, the other Barbara left. I'm sorry. I should have let folks know.
Okay.
She,
That's okay.
Go ahead.
And I'm looking more into the future. I know that what we're in right now is really hard to take because this is what we've all known for 30-plus years, and we've been telling our families, and they've all thought we're nutso and crazy, but it's actually happening now, and it's happening at lightning speed. And I have to sit back, you know, at first it's like, oh, so many people are so worried and so scared. What are we going to do? What are we going to do? But if you look at really what's happening with the gas prices being as high as they are, with, let me tell you, with the electric bill, our electric bill raised 40%, and we live in one house. There are two people here, and my son at times, he's off and on, $287 in a month in the summer, and we have lights. We don't even turn on lights in the summer because we have daylight all the time in Alaska, but our rates are sky high, and people are literally having to, in order to cut back, save money so that they can survive and eat and all still be a family, are having to cut back on extra things like maybe internet service, TV service, cable service, satellite dish, going out, spending too much money on gas. And you know what that's going to create? That's going to create what our family has, or what our country has lost, and that's the good, strong family. It's going to bring back personal relationships to where people are going to have to sit right across the table from each other and look each other in the face. They're going to have to work together. And this is how we're going to get more people in, is by having the good old handshake and the look in the eye and the trust with each other again. That's where we're going to get our numbers, is getting out there and talking to people, not on a political basis, but on a, we are Americans, brothers and sisters here. And I think as soon as we get more and more away from the technology, it's going to literally bring us back to the simpler life, to where people have to know how to have character and integrity. They're going to have to know how to trust each other. We're going to have to bring back those solid principles that we were raised with, that honesty is the best policy, and we're going to have to look people in the face, and we're going to have to be people of our word, and we can only do that by relationships one-on-one. And that's how I see us bringing in people, because we need the numbers. The percentage of us that are involved within these parties and the echelons of what we are doing and writing resolutions and filing complaints and doing what we do is very small, and we do need the numbers out there. What we have put together up here in Alaska, Pam Good and I am the secretary of the Republican Party, which she just resigned. We've been working on an organization which is called AXIAM, A-K-S-I-A-M, which stands for Alaskans I Am. It kind of bore off the thought of the We Texans. I don't know if you've seen that. There's a group of Texans, just grassroots people called We Texans, and they keep each other informed. And we're having a Liberty Rally at the end of this month up in at the Deltana Fair in Delta Junction, Alaska. Now, Delta Junction, you guys all have counties. We have boroughs. This is a borough, it's like a county, but in Alaska, our state constitution allows, or, you know, states that we can live in an unincorporated borough or an incorporated borough. An unincorporated borough allows the people to own their own land. They do not have to pay taxes. It's like the only free place in the United States you really can live and own your own land. So
Wow. The
fair is going to be held up there. It's just phenomenal when you start looking at this. And so we're bringing in speakers from all over, and we're wanting to get more and more. We don't care what party. You can be no party. You can be Republican, Democrat. We're reaching out to anybody, independent and libertarian. And Alaska has really been working. Every Sunday night we have a statewide teleconference, which is only for educational purposes. And we've had issues of nullification, the Constitution, the unincorporation of the boroughs, and we're teaching people how to do that. And everybody that gets on this call, nobody talks about a specific party or what's going on in the Republican Party or the Democrat Party. Everybody is just people. None of us have a party affiliation. And we've been able to get this off the ground and have, like, the president of the Libertarian Party up here did an entire teleconference. One man from the Independent Party, I believe, did the whole teleconference on the drone issue. And people called in and began to get educated. So we're trying to get the word out across the state, and we even invite people from out of state to chime in every Sunday night at 8 o'clock Alaska time and listen in and become educated on things that they need to know. And hopefully by hearing us all talk, that we're all just people on the same level, we'll be able to bring those people in and then let them be who they need to be and get to work and get busy on helping us all in this whole mess that we're in our country. It really, most people don't want to hear anymore about the party. They're tired of the party. They're just over the whole politics thing. So
they just want to be grassroots and work together.
Yes, they really do. And that's the one common denominator we have, is we are all born free people. And that's the common denominator. I don't care. When we can understand that and see that, And back to the idea of no technology. When people quit listening to the TV and the news telling them how they should think about other people, that's going back to that same premise that I was talking about, where we need to be simple-minded again, and we need to have block parties. We need to talk to the neighbor across the fence, and we need to invite our neighbors over. And we need to quit going places and all being silent and looking at our little iPhones and knee phones and not discussing and talking with people. We're not engaging people in conversation. We've been taught to separate ourselves, and that's just what the establishment wants. So I see it as a blessing, because I think that all of the squashing in that they're going to do to us is going to literally force people back home. Fathers and mothers and children are going to be sitting in their homes again and having to discuss things, because nobody can afford to get in the car and go to town. It's going to be, you know, it's going to have to be that way. People are going to have to depend on their neighbors. So it may be a long, you know, it may be 40, 50 years down the road, but that's, we have to have something, some sort of a goal to look toward and educate our children and the next generation that way, because right now we're having to fight a fight just to stay afloat. But we have to have a goal for future to make sure that the next generation knows how to stand and not be squashed any further than we are now. That was a soapbox.
Well, no, that's quite all right. Try to give everyone a good amount of time for soapboxes. And that being said, I would like to hear from Nicole, see what, have anything you'd like to say on that, and then we'll have Cindy.
Well, I want to say, Barbara, that it has been very nice talking to you, and actually I was, like, jotting down notes on things that you were saying when you were talking so that I can look up some of these things, like the group that you were talking about, Axiom, and, you know, look more into these things. I think we are going to have to. I mean, what you're saying about people being sick of hearing about the party, I'm sick of it too. I view a lot of this as kind of an experiment to see if really it could be an open party and an open process. And I want to be able to say that, you know, we tried every route to allow them to internally address these things that are wrong with the process. And I think that at some point, I mean, frequently we need to do, I guess, cost-benefit analysis for our own lives and determine whether all the work that we're putting into this one aspect is benefiting, worth what we're putting in, basically. And for me right now, it really doesn't seem like it is, because on the national level or the local level, it's very, they're very resistant to change, but it takes a lot to stay involved and to try to bring about any change. And, you know, the overall goal is not just to change the party. You know, that's just been one little aspect of the overall goal of bringing about an overall change in the world that we see. And so when you put that into perspective with what the efforts that are being trained to accomplish in the party, it's like, well, you know, all this work, and then it's not even budging the overall goal. And I'm, you know, at some point, I think for myself, I probably am a little bit more obsessive than even most people, and so have been really pushing this pretty far. But for everybody, at some point, there's going to have to be that determination. And, you know, a lot of people, they just stay working within the party, just thinking, you know, of personal political goals or things like that. And I really don't have any political aspirations at all. So I'm thinking this will be, this upcoming meeting is going to be kind of really the last attempt for me, just to see where they go with it and what happens. And after that, I am thinking, you know, my efforts would probably go a lot farther if I was spending a lot more time hounding legislators or trying to bring resolutions through on the, you know, within the legislature or something like that. I mean, even something small, because, you know, you pass a resolution, you do all this work to argue it, and it, at the end it's like, okay, so what have you accomplished if the party actually passes it? Most of the time it's nothing. So,
well,
that's disheartening.
It's an energy. No, I don't think it's wasted. I see, I'm older than you. I'm past 50. And my children are in age range from 32 down to 19. And I am saying that, you know, my involvement at this point and what they see me do and what they see me, they listen to my teleconferences, they see me write letters, they see me go and speak, and they listen to what I'm doing. And we have to be doing this for their benefit, so that they can see that when their time comes to step up, they can do it. If we don't make this representation, and if we just continue to sit back, they will not have the intestinal fortitude to stand up and raise the next generation. We cannot let, like, I love the fresh new blood that comes in and is excited and wants to write a resolution, and people that want to stand up and do things. But the whole, my goal and what I can see for the party is, yes, these people are corrupt, but the more we stand up and put the truth out there for people to see that we're standing on that side of the line, that is more indicative of their corruption. That we don't have to do a lot of explaining. We don't have to tell people, they are so corrupt, they are the horrible people. We don't have to say that, because when we're just standing on principle and we're standing on the side of the line that is for the truth and what is the black and white written law and they don't, then they're burying themselves, and it just keeps on going in that direction. And I know now, because when we came back from Tampa and we had that meet, you know, we get together, well, there was a meeting in Fairbanks in September after Tampa. I was unable to go, but my other colleagues went up there. It was just amazing how blatantly in your face these people do not mind that they continue to just break rules, adjourn quickly. They recess, they get together, they get their heads together. I mean, they are a planned, well-oiled machine that knows how to scheme and devise a plan. And we are simply going as people on our own integrity and saying, look, we're following your rules. We're doing everything you've asked us. You can even change your rules, which you did to us at the state convention the night before the convention started. You changed your rules. We stayed up all night having to alter what we were going to do to fit your rule plan. Now we get out there and follow your rules, and you still break them. So, see, they know that we are the ones that work tirelessly, and they know that they need us in the party because we are the workers. So now when they pass their resolution in L.A. to work with the grassroots, sorry, bud, too many of us have left. And the problem is, I understand that you need to stay and do that. But on the other hand, I don't feel I can trust these people anymore. Why should I go back in there and have them lie to me like they did all the times before to get me in there? And then when they pass their ruling and say, oh, no, we've passed a rule now. We're going to get along with the grassroots. You think I'm going to believe that? I don't believe it for a second. They're going to do that just to calm you down for a while. But then they're going to start having to get you to go to work for them. They need you to work for their agenda. They know that we're the workers, and that's how I see the whole scenario.
Well, one thing that, you know, one of the reasons that I've been trying to work within the party, because I only switched my registration to Republican to really get involved with the Ron Paul stuff, but one of the reasons that I have stayed a Republican, even though I consider myself an independent and, you know, have my own ideas, most of them align Republican, but, you know, don't agree on everything. The reason that I have stayed is because where I live in North Carolina, I feel like, or I have felt like, in order to make any political change, I'm going to have to work with one of the two parties because our ballot access laws are so restrictive.
Oh,
that,
yes, for sure.
You know, we can't even run as independents
here. I'm
sorry,
your ballot access laws?
In order to have candidates on the ballot. So in North Carolina, in order to be on the ballot, you have to run in one of the parties that it already has ballot access. Like the Democrats and Republicans obviously keep their ballot access because they have such high participation. And then if you want to run as an independent, you would have to collect signatures of people within that district who are voting members who would have the ability to be able to vote for you. And it's, I think the signature requirement is 2% of the eligible voters of the district, something along those lines. And it is outrageous trying to collect that many signatures, so much so North Carolina actually has the most restrictive ballot access laws, as far as I'm aware, in the nation, because we have some groups here that are focused specifically on this, on trying to lower our ballot access requirements so that we can just introduce some level of competition. And also with ballot referendums, a lot of states, they will allow for people to have an issue, like, you know, a piece of legislation, an amendment to their statutes, and collect an amount of signatures that they, if they want it to be voted on, if they collect their amount of signatures, they can have it put on the ballot. We don't have that here in North Carolina. It's illegal, actually. We run very much as a representative republic, if we want a piece of legislation, then we have to take it through a General Assembly. And, I mean, we have such a problem here because our Republican leadership blocks a lot of the constitutional legislation that some of our representatives who are really, you know, advocating for the people, and they bring forward legislation that the people want, the leadership blocks it from being heard. And so my feeling is, well, we really need to work within the party to make this reform, to make this change, and then when we get good people in there, we'll be able to change some of this ballot access issues, because we keep bringing it up before the General Assembly to lower the requirements to an attainable requirement. But, of course, it's directly against their interest. They don't want to introduce competition in the election. Mm-hmm. So it keeps getting shut down, but at some point, you gotta. For me, I'm just thinking, I really need to start thinking outside of the box because, and you know, stop relying on these folks to do something that's directly against their interest, and start looking at some other options, like, you know, market options, getting, you know, more outside of just the party realm.
Well, but if you have to literally ask permission for things to get put on the ballot rather than you have to be in contact with all of your representatives all of the time. But is that what you're saying?
Well, what I'm saying is, like, when we have an election, a candidate can file for office. If they want to run for the Democrat or Republican Party, they could file, pay their filing fee, and be on the ballot. But a candidate who wants to run as an independent has to do a whole lot of work in order to have ballot, in order to be on the ballot, and so much so that I don't know of a single independent that has ever run in North Carolina.
Wow.
I see what you're saying. So your only option is two parties. You don't get a choice of a third party.
Right. We have the Libertarian Party is the only other party that currently has ballot access, and they are struggling to keep it. They barely kept their ballot access after this last election.
Mm-hmm. And the system's definitely made to work against them, and in a lot of ways, at least in my opinion, against the grassroots. But I hate to say this, we only have about 9 minutes left, even of the extended period. So what I'd like to do is see if there's any closing remarks by the folks who are still on the line. And Harriet, I know in the chat you said you weren't going to make comment on some of the things we've heard recently, but if there are any closing comments you'd like to make, Harriet, I'd like to open up an opportunity for you to do so. Harriet? Okay, I saw that she's still on the line, but I guess she just wants – you there, Harriet? Okay. Well, then, if not, she'd like to just stay and listen to the rest. Thank you very much, Harriet, for coming to the show. So I'll bring it over to Cindy, and then we'll have Barbara, and then Nicole, you'll close it out. I guess if each person just takes about a minute, that'll give enough people the people enough time to get some equal time. So go ahead, Cindy.
Well, I was just thinking, as per what she was saying, we sort of have that same problem on the federal level because a lot of good congressmen up there in Washington are introducing legislation that would help our country, but it never makes it out of committee because we've got people like Boehner in charge of the Republican House and Reid in control of the Democrat Senate. And so those two men, who are basically on the same page anyway, are working to keep the grassroots congressmen in check because they, even though they have a great piece of legislation, they got all kinds of people behind it out on the big floor, they cannot get it out of committee. And I'm not sure, but what maybe that's what the grassroots needs to be focusing more on than anything, is doing away with the practices of local and federal legislative bodies where they actually, by their rules can keep us quiet. And this is kind of just bubbling up and flowing out of what we learned in Tampa. And maybe this should be our focus, changing not only our party rules, but also our federal rules, our congressional rules.
And I did see, and thank you very much, Cindy. I'm not trying to rush anyone, but I do see the lingering time. I see another number here. It's the same number, Harriet, and that's yours. Was that a different number you're trying to come in on?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah real quick, if I can get Barbara and Nicole to
I just want to say that it's been a very, very nice evening, and I've learned a lot. But just when I thought I had it all together, now there's new things that I'm introduced to that, you know, I want to look into. But and that's good. But I still are holding that we need to get this issue of the resolution rules taken care of, and then we can all move on from there.
Okay, well, thank you very much, Harriet, and definitely send me some links for your blog so I can get that on the website.
Right.
The BarbaraLogicalTalk.com website. Okay, great. And Barbara, you?
Yes. I appreciate, Nicole, I appreciate your staying in the party. and I do. And we've all been there, and we still have the same vitality and the same conviction of what we need to do. And I'm really happy. I'm really encouraged by the amount of support we have nationally with each other, because we have many of us in other states that keep in contact. And I think it's going to be imperative in the future that we all know each other, and that we do have, you know, if it weren't for the Republican Party, we wouldn't be knowing each other. So, you know, you look at it that way. But in a way, I've begun to embrace their bad dealings, because what it does is it starts to separate the wheat from the chaff, you know, or is that the right word? Mm-hmm. Because it's really bringing forward the truth, and it's making the separation of who's going to be in the fight and who's going to stand there and who's going to get it done and work towards that means. And I think we all have a part to play, and I think we all are finding our best suited position for the time that we're doing this. And I just wanted to encourage you, once our site gets up, AKSIAM, that's the Alaskans I Am, and that's the grassroots of Alaska that's coming forth. So that's all I have to say, and I thank you, and I appreciate the time you've given me to just get on my soapbox.
No problem. Thank
you
very much. And of course,
you're welcome.
You and everyone else, welcome to come back to the show anytime. And Nicole?
Yeah, well, Nicole Revels, have CarolinaLibertyPack.com, and then the LibertyRoll.com is where we'll be doing a lot of the reporting and of what's going on at the RNC meeting this August. If you want to check that out, and I'll try to check back in with you too and give you some feed while we're there on what's going
The
resolutions committee should meet on Wednesday, so that'll be perfect. It's been good talking to you all, and I really appreciate all the work that each of us, you know, are doing, and I really enjoy hearing about all this stuff, and thanks for giving us an outlet.
No problem, anytime, and we'll definitely have to do some follow-up shows on it, because it's very important for us to share it. And so, definitely folks listening to this on the archives, share the link with other folks so they can listen to it as well. And they'll probably cut off the ending song, but I will And tonight, as I do every night, so have a good night, take care, and look forward to seeing everyone again. And that is with a song by Aubrey Ashburn, and you can hear more of her music at www.aubreyashburn.com. Take care.